This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the big show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's already Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. July the 4th yesterday, afternoon baseball everywhere. It's a nice way to spend the day. Lots to get to this on today's program. More Jets. What are their other needs? Mr. Steve Mason was on the afternoon ride. We'll hear from him. Andrew Harris, Blue Bomber running back. We'll hear from him as well. Get into the Bombers and the Stamps a little bit more. New CFL commission is supposed to be named today. Winnipegger, proud Winnipegger. Mr. Paul Edmonds, Darren Bombing, Gus Katsaros, and of course an hour of your phone calls at 9 o'clock on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Finally some sunshine, it looks like, for a little while, huh? A little bit of a tumultuous day yesterday. Some kooky clouds midday, and then it clears up. And now, if I'm seeing things right here, Wix, until you pee all over my parade here, I looked yesterday, midday, yeah, like sun all the way through to next Wednesday is what I'm seeing, man. Next Friday, like all the way through. Can I, won't that?
Enjoy it, baby.
It's about damn time we get some hot, sunny weather, right?
Tarps off.
Yeah.
Walk around with
the tarp
off.
We're going to have some sweet, no tan lines around here, man.
This is T.O. weather, no doubt. That this is tarps off July.
Start raking the lawn.
Yeah. Out at the golf course, you pick your course. Glendale, no tarps on.
No. Oh, they'll
you get tossed off the course for that?
I don't know, actually.
I know on the munis there, you can.
I've been out there twice. I haven't been tossed. So I presume everything's a go. One of those things where I went back and was like, am I still alive? Is this kosher? Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this all right? Yeah, it's going to be a beautiful week. And today is going to be a beautiful day. There's a chance of cloud and maybe a 10% chance of drizzle here and there and clouds mostly throughout the rest of this week. But today, 0% chance. So it's going to be a bright, sunshiny day, as they say. Lots to get to, including Mr. Steve Mason on the afternoon ride here yesterday with TSN 1290, Hustler, and our very own Brandon Rewicki. Interesting interview. Stuff from him.
He's a good talker. It was super interesting. Yeah, he's going to be fun with the media this year.
So is he your starter? I was having this conversation with Joel Marcoux yesterday, and he was enjoying our conversation on the big show yesterday, and he said, but to him, there's no doubt he's the starter coming in.
Really?
They might say what they said, and he heard he was covering the live, of course, free agency coverage on Saturday here on TSN 1290 with Rick Ralph, and said, I understood what Chevy said, I heard what Steve Mason said, but he goes, come on, $4.1 million, you're bringing this kid in, and you think in the first 10 games of the season that Hellebuck's going to start 8 and he's going to start 2? No doubt in his mind that Steve Mason is a starter. And I thought, you know what, we discussed this and we're waiting for training camp and everything, but really, let's get to it on paper. We talked about it yesterday, maybe game one, but then they'd figured out, is he the starter this year?
I don't know what their plans are going to be for it. I don't know, and I really don't care a whole lot either. Like, just one of these guys to get in. The thing is also that, I need to find it. I know that Mason came out and spoke against the platoon situation. So, you know, he doesn't like that. But is also now are we expecting Hellebuck to only play maybe 30 games this year or 25? Like, that whole thing will be interesting as well. And I suppose if you're Connor Hellebuck, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. But would you rather him play 30 games here? Like, just the whole development thing is an interesting aspect of it. And maybe Connor Hellebuck is fighting and wrestling his way to play at a higher level and is able to snatch it away. I don't think it's settled, for sure. I think that there's going to be some back and forth, some level of platoon early on here that will determine that.
This is the quote from Mason last year in Philly, because it was a pretty big topic in Philly at the time. But he said, when asked about the platoon situation between him and Neuwirth, he said, it doesn't work. It's shown throughout the league it doesn't work. Tampa got rid of it. St. Louis got rid of it. It's got nothing to do with Noivy and I's people. I've got no issue with him. It just doesn't work for the goaltending position.
Huh.
Now, we asked him yesterday about, you know, the whole platoon thing in the NHL, and he kind of clarified his answer a little bit more. And, you know, he makes some good points about it. He seemed a little bit more open to it. But, you know, I would agree in having talked with him yesterday and kind of trying to read between the lines a bit. I thought yesterday he would be the starter going into the year and play the majority of the games. And after hearing him talk, just kind of further strengthened my belief that that's what he was maybe initially brought in to do. I don't think it's set in stone, like Troy said. Like, if Hellebuck comes in and he lights it up, well, yeah, then put him in and have him play 40, 45, like whatever amount of games. Like, I think to start at least, Mason will be tasked with getting the majority of the games, but it doesn't mean that it's an open and shut kind of situation here. I think both goalies will decide how this plays out moving forward, and really the one ultimate wild card in all of this that we won't know until, you know, I don't even know, training camp might not be until the first couple of games of the season, is how much has Hellebuck improved over the summer?
Yep.
Like, what did he do to improve his game after his first season? That's kind of the ultimate wild card in all of this, because you have this highly touted goalie prospect. You know, like, what did he accomplish over the course of a couple of months in terms of improving for this year?
Are you going to see that in training camp, though? Because I think he will. I think he's going to get better. And I hearken back constantly to Paul Maurice's comments a couple of years ago about, you know, Trouba and Scheifele. As long as a player, it's a 4 or 5 month off season, so if they can get 10 to 15% better, he's happy with that. He said a lot of people think the off season gives you an enormous amount of time to get better at your craft. And between rest, getting back into tip-top physical shape, healing up, having a little bit of downtime mentally, there's not a lot of time to get better. And if a player gets 10 to 15% better, I think Hellebuck will be better next year. But how much better, and whether you can see that in camp through a couple of exhibition games going into the season, I don't know. I think you've got to get 10 games under his belt to see if and how much better he's got. And if Mason's a starter out of the camp, how does he get that, you know, in the first 25 games?
Yeah, I wonder with Mason's year last year and with what Hellebuck did, like, their numbers aren't much different. So last year anyway, right? And you're talking about Connor Hellebuck making 12 additional saves, stopping 12 goals last year to have a .915 save percentage. Mason would be along those same lines with something relatively close for shots against. So you're not talking about anything dramatic as far as improvement goes. Couple little tweaks sort of thing. I refuse to believe that they're kicking the notion of Hellebuck being the starter to the side, kicking it to the curb, and giving Mason the torch. So here, it's yours. Go. I just don't. I think there's going to be a wrestling match for it.
And I think there should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on paper.
Well, and you kind of have to go with what you've seen so far, right? And Hellebuck's still relatively green at the NHL level. Steve Mason has played 50-plus games for the past 4 seasons with the Flyers, and his numbers, the numbers last year weren't very good, but a .918 over the course of 4 seasons as a starter is well above average in the NHL over that time. So I right now I just think Steve Mason's a better goalie than Connor Hellebuck, but I don't know how improved he's going to be coming into this season. So if I had to place my bets right now, I mean I'm probably higher on Steve Mason than some other people might be, but wouldn't surprise me in the least at all to see him play 50 games for the Jets next year.
And this is the big show on TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And to me, that's fine. Like, I know we went through this last year when Andre Pavlik was called back up and he was given some games. I don't think it's intended to sort of, it's hard to say this, but push Connor to the side. I think it's intended to help him. I think it's intended as a 23-year-old goalie to bring in a vet with a 2-year contract. And even if he is a starter this year, which I kind of agreed with Marcoux's comments that at $4.1 million and, you know, training camp is what it is. It's hard to come in and sort of wrestle that job away from a guy who's been a proven starter in the National Hockey League. that he will be the guy this year. I don't think that's meant to punish Connor Hellebuyck. I just think it's meant to get some more wins and help develop Connor. And Mason talked glowingly about that, like sort of. And I agree with Mason's comments about the tandem. It's a rare situation where that benefits both goalies and the team. I don't know many coaches who like it either.
Have we seen that during the regular season? It seems to be more of a playoff type thing, but there's been all kinds of success for a couple goalies and teams that do the platoon thing during the regular season, hasn't there been?
I think especially for if you're going to look at it from kind of the Hellebuyck perspective, I think the Anaheim Ducks are a real solid blueprint where they had Freddie Anderson and Gibson. Whether you want to call it a battle or a platoon, I mean, however you want to term it, they both, when Freddie Anderson was there, split the games pretty close to down the middle, with Anderson kind of getting the more as the season went along. And as you saw last year, you know, Gibson with a 922, I believe, in the regular season, like, didn't really affect him a couple years down the road. So, you know, even if Hellebuyck plays 30, 40 games, it's not like it's stunting his development at all. Right, like it's he can still learn, you know, get a lot of valuable experience playing 30 games at the NHL level next season, especially if some of those games come near the end of the year when the team's kind of pushing for their playoff spot.
Michael Hutchinson, future waived, AHL this year.
Well, if he's going to be with this organization, he'll be in the A.
And Eric Comrie has a contract for this year only. So next year, they'll have Steve Mason at another year 4.1. Connor Hellebuyck has yet to sign this year, but I presume he did get qualified. And then you have Eric Comrie, who needs a contract after this year. So there's the three of those guys still around, which I, you know, we've seen goalies the past couple of years sign 2 to 3 year deals, with the first year being a two way and then the next year being a one way with Comrie. But it just sets up for a real interesting situation and some depth for the Winnipeg Jets at the position they most likely need it the most now that they've got a Dmitry Kulikov, I would think. No? Like, it's just real interesting, and there's no way to answer it. Like, there's some guys on Twitter yesterday going, well, what about Comrie in a year from now, and where's he going to fit in, and does that mean they're going to shop him and stuff? And I'm like, well, nobody knows until this year plays out. Like, yeah. You really need to see what happens.
If Comrie ends this upcoming season almost regardless of the team in front of him, with a 906, then what? Like, if he has another year where he's 906, 907, at what point in time does the conversation change with the potential? Like, this is a massive year for Eric Comrie, is it not?
Mm-hmm. I agree, and, you know, the reason Hellebuyck was kind of fast-tracked to the NHL was because, you know, even behind similarly poorly talented Moose teams, Hellebuyck was above a 920 in the AHL and putting up good numbers, right? So it's one thing to kind of dominate the league for a couple of years and then, you know, make the argument that not a whole lot left for him to learn down there. Let's give him a new challenge. Eric Comrie, I think, is at least 2 years away. Like, he's got to put up some huge numbers down there first before I think you even contemplate having him challenge whoever for a spot up in the NHL, which is fine. Like, it's not like his development is coming along too slowly or anything, but, you know, like a 906 and a 907, like, you need to see bigger numbers. I know a lot of people are kind of just clamoring for the new guy to come in and the young kid to take over, but
Hellebuyck went 921, 922, his 2 years behind a team that was relatively similar to what Comrie's dealing with in front of him.
Well, he went 921 the year they went to the Calder Cup final. And then the next year was 922 in 30 games. And then 26, that was the same year, 26 there. I'm not as down on Comrie about his numbers. Everyone I talk to say he's developing and coming along just fine for a goaltender.
The question is, though, Jim, if he has another season at 906 or 907, does that change the storyline for him? Like, he has to bust out at some point in time. You can't make the jump to the NHL if your numbers in the A are sub-910.
Yeah, you can. And guys like Steve Valenquette and all the goaltender experts – throughout the year have said that scouts, everybody is very high on Comrie despite his numbers. They don't put a lot of emphasis on his numbers in the A because of the two teams he's been on. I agree with you. They need to improve, and they should. He needs to improve. But I don't. What I'm trying to say is I don't think the emphasis on his overall save percentages is a detriment to him as people think. Everything I've heard, talked to goaltenders, scouts, they all say that forget his numbers. He's coming along fine, and he's developing really good. Hmm. So, but I agree. Like, I mean, it's another big year for him too, especially with Mason here. It's just an interesting situation, and I tend to sort of slide to I think it's Steve Mason's job right out of the gate. I think day one he's the starter. I think the first 10 games he gets 7 to 8 games this year, and it goes from there. And where this goes after this season and throughout this season is going to be real interesting. We'll take a break here on The Big Show, and when we come back, Canadian playoff teams. Are Jets one of them? That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity on September 22nd and September 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. 22 minutes past the hour. Jets make the playoffs this year, gentlemen?
I don't think they do. I think they're going to be improved. You know, people are of the mindset that, hey, if the Jets had better goaltending, then they would have made the playoffs. No. If the Jets had better goaltending, they would have been closer to competing for a spot in the playoffs. You know, and wouldn't it be, isn't it interesting that, you know, the Jets get some better, or if they are competing for a playoff spot, maybe it's Nashville, they wrestle out of a playoff spot. You see how successful Nashville was once they got to the playoffs. I think they're going to be improved. I just don't think that there's enough room in the Central for me to justify thinking that with whatever pixie dust is going to be sprinkled around, that all of a sudden this team is going to become that much more aware defensively, and that the penalty kill is going to take this jump the way everyone hopes and needs it to. Those two things coming together, if people can give me a reasonable explanation as to why those two areas will be dramatically improved compared to the number of years past, then I'm all ears. But I say no, they don't make the playoffs.
I think they do. I think the addition of Mason and the improvement of Hellebuck over the course of a summer bumps up that team save percentage to, I think, closer to 9. I don't know if it gets to 915, but it'll be in the neighborhood at least. And I think you'll see that bumped up a bit. I think this team is going to score more goals this year too. Like, you know, there's a lot of focus on the defensive side of things, and rightly so. But this team is going to score a ton. Like, and there's going to be very few teams in the league, maybe Pittsburgh and Toronto off the top of my head, that are going to score more than the Winnipeg Jets do this season, Dallas as well, but they'll be in the top five in goals for. And you just need minimal improvements on special teams. It's not like you need them to be top five or top 10 in each, right? Like just a bit better on the power play to get closer to the top 10. And then even if you're in the 20s on the penalty kill, like get like to 20th. Which isn't a crazy leap to suggest, but even if they can get there, special teams improves vastly, and this is kind of the ultimate wild card, but luck, like just injury luck, like don't get decimated on the blue line for the third year in a row.
Which is
luck, right?
Maybe, like, well, a luck, or is there a predisposition for Toby Enstrom, Tyler Myers? Like, are they more injury prone than some other sort of workhorse type D? And if you've got the Jets going in, and I know dang well you've got St. Louis and Colorado for sure outside,
yep.
So who's your team to join them outside the line then?
Yeah, that's a valid question. I think Minnesota's going to drop off a bit.
I have them making the playoffs. I haven't decided who's not, though. So I have the Jets making the playoffs for the exact same reasons. I think the goaltending is going to be better, Hellebuck included in that. And I agree with you on the specialty teams. This is like, you know, they can't get any worse. So I think they're going to get better. Obviously, they're working on it. I know a lot of people think they're not, but I think they're going to get better at that. And I think that'll be enough to push them in. I'm not sure who doesn't. So let's get a quick ranking, gentlemen, here on the Big Show TSN 1290. Rank your Canadian teams and who gets in and who doesn't. Who's the best Canadian team?
I find it hard, though, to say the Jets are going in without being able to tell me who's coming out.
Well,
I worry about Chicago, gentlemen. They're still over the cap right now. Their depth-wise, they're going to have probably a good solid two lines, but their defensive core is weaker. I know they still have Corey Crawford. I just, depth-wise, if they get injured, I'm concerned about Chicago.
And they also don't have Scott Darling to back up Crawford, who would Darling put up a 9. I think Chicago had the second best save percentage behind Washington last year as a team. So
wait a second.
I'm not saying Chicago. I'm not taking Chicago out. They're the Patriots to me. I'll pick them to be out once they are out. But
I need two Western teams not to make the playoffs because I have Dallas and Winnipeg getting in.
Yeah, and see, I'm not totally sold on Dallas just yet. I know they won the offseason and everything, but they were putrid last year. And hey, it wouldn't surprise me for them to win the Central, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them finish sixth in the Central.
The thing is, them being putrid last year, we are all aware they only surrendered 6 more goals than the Jets, right?
Correct.
They also had 9 regulars out of their lineup for the first 6 weeks of the season. Like
Dallas is the ultimate wild card to me. Yeah. They're to me both ends of the spectrum. So I'm not all in on Dallas just yet. But I think Minnesota's old. Like a lot of their top guys are old, and as good of a coach as Bruce Boudreau is, it's not like I'm going to pick them to finish last. But I just think the Jets can leapfrog them. And
Anaheim's old too.
That's a lot of points, Wicks. You're talking about 19 points. Jets are going to leapfrog Mini.
We have to take a break. We're going to hear from Andrew Harris in our next segment, but we'll continue this conversation as well and rank the Canadian playoff teams or the Canadian teams as a whole. We'll do both of those things next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games from July 28th to August 13th. All eyes will be on Winnipeg. Thousands of athletes will come from across our country to compete. 16 sports, over 250 events, and it will be the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games, welcoming over 20,000 visitors. You can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag GearUp for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit thecanadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Game Gear Fridays. And the entertainment lineups for the opening and closing ceremonies were recently announced. You can get tickets to both of those through Ticketmaster.ca. Opening ceremonies at MTS Center on July 28th and closing ceremonies at Investors Group Field on August 13th. Also, 11 days of over 150 artists, fireworks every night. The Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries Canada Games Festival is the place to be for fun and entertainment between July 29th and August 12th. There will be something for everyone as we showcase the talent and diversity of Manitoba's finest festivals and homegrown performers like the Crash Test Dummies and the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra, along with Fred Penner. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for a full festival lineup. This is The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. Gentlemen, let's get into the playoff picture tomorrow. You can go through this afternoon and this evening the teams and how they stack up right now on paper as we head into the dog days of July and August. But right now, let's rank the Canadian teams on paper. And when I mean on paper, I mean obviously there could be some changes. We've got to go through training camp. Who knows who gets injured, who doesn't. Heaven forbid. But how do you rank the Canadian teams?
Okay, so I've got them ranked here. This is how I've got it. I got Edmonton number one. I got Calgary a little bit begrudgingly number two. One of these teams, Calgary, Dallas, one of the teams that have added all these pieces, it's going to flame out. It's not going to work. But nonetheless, I'll go Edmonton, Calgary, and then I'm going to go, because of the Babcock factor, I'm going to go Toronto number three. And then I'll put in the Jets. Take a coin, flip it. It comes up Ottawa next. Then Montreal. I'm really just concerned about the scoring and even the back end of Montreal. I think I just don't feel comfortable about the situation going on in Montreal right now. And then, of course, there is no question who's about 20 lengths behind coming down the stretch here in the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. Everyone's going to have Vancouver last, so we'll just move past, I think, at least. So we'll just move past that. I'll go backwards forwards. I got Ottawa ahead of Vancouver. I just think they caught lightning in a bottle last year. I look at their roster, especially compared to the other teams, and outside of Erik Karlsson, not a whole lot kind of, I don't know, gets you excited.
Yeah, do you need much more?
Fair, but we've seen in the past that Erik Karlsson alone isn't enough to always get them into the playoffs. So I just think they're going to take a step back next year. I got Montreal after that. And I don't really like Montreal's roster that much either, especially on the back end, but Carey Price is kind of the ultimate trump card in this, where it almost doesn't matter who you have out there. Price gives you a chance to go all the way every year anyways. I do have Winnipeg fourth as well. I think Calgary leapfrogged Edmonton with the moves that they made, although the one thing with them is I'm not so sure about Mike Smith just yet, but maybe for 1 year that kind of gets mitigated a little bit. But I mean, Calgary's roster is real, real strong on paper.
Yep.
And I'm going to probably get killed for this in the city here, but
you're going Toronto number one, huh?
Toronto Maple Leafs are the best Canadian team right now.
You got to be kidding me.
I just said it.
And I don't like Toronto's defense again this year.
They have the best coach in hockey.
Yeah.
With the amount of rookies they had last year, still put up 95 points in the Eastern Conference. And you look at their forwards up front, and they're dynamite. They're dynamite 1 through 9. Like they're so, so strong. And Austin Matthews had a season for the ages last year. And you just like there's just very few players in hockey even that are going to really finish ahead of Matthews in scoring next year, I believe, overall in the NHL. To put up 40 in his first year, the amount of shots that he had on goal, I really, really like Toronto's roster, and they add some depth on defense as well. I wouldn't surprise me at all to see them finish atop the Atlantic next year.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. We're going to hear from Andrew Harris coming up in this segment, but we're ranking our Canadian teams. You guys gave me some stuff to think about for sure. I got Calgary. Here's the thing I have a problem ranking the Canadian teams is that the East is just, I think, a lot lighter than the West.
Really?
So, yeah. I mean, I look at these standings. Like, Montreal had 103 points last year. Ottawa had 98 points last year. Like, to me, it's... Toronto had 95, and then you go out west, like Calgary had 94, and Edmonton had 103, which is just four more than Montreal. I just think it's tougher in the west to get wins than it is in the east. You guys think
really?
It's tougher in the east?
I think it's. I think overall it's pretty dang close. You look at the Metropolitan. I mean, you got a tougher division than the Metropolitan?
I think the Metro and the Central are similar, and I think the Atlantic and the Pacific are similar.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's a whole lot to distinguish between the two conferences.
I have Vancouver, as you guys do, at the bottom. I've got Calgary at the top because I like their defense. I think Edmonton and Calgary have dynamic forward lines.
Are you saying you got Calgary number one?
Yeah. I just like their defense better than Edmonton's defense.
And
I think Mike Smith is equally as good as Cam Talbot, but I think Cam Talbot's
damn good. And this for Calgary to pull this, like how often? I'm just a little bit wary of the A plus B plus C is it going to equal D? Like it just doesn't transpire very often, man. When you bring in all these ads, and it doesn't like the synergy involved doesn't normally add up, and I wonder. I hope it does for Calgary. Like, if it does, even if it doesn't, if it doesn't maximize or if the potential for the Flames isn't what a lot of people are expecting, the one thing for sure is the Battle of Alberta is back on, baby, huh?
Well, and I – yeah, for sure. And I just – we're talking all about all the forwards and the offense and the goal. I mean, look at their defensive core. Look at their top six.
It's filthy.
Compared to even Montreal, compared to, you know, Toronto. Toronto, I mean, God love Ron Hainsey, but they just signed Ron Hainsey to a two-year deal to shore up the defense. I think everybody's – I don't know how people aren't talking about Calgary's defense.
That's why the Marleau thing is a little bit confounding in Toronto, right? Like – there was a glaring – they needed to add to that defense, and you go pick up Marleau for $7 million, right? Or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Six and a half.
Yeah, so it's you're definitely of concern that D is still in Toronto.
So I have Winnipeg fourth. I can't decide whether Montreal or Toronto is going to be third, or I'm going to go Montreal third just because of goaltending, but I don't – I think Toronto has
– So you have Edmonton fifth?
No, I have Edmonton second. I got Calgary, Edmonton, Montreal, Winnipeg, Toronto, Ottawa, Vancouver.
Huh.
What do you think? We'll let you let us know on the Boss Pizza fan line.
That's a long way down for it. So you think Toronto's going to regress this year?
I do think Toronto's going to regress this year. I don't like their defense, and I think the style they played is really, really hard. People forget that as much as they got in the playoffs and had 95 points and 40 wins, they had wins that were 6-5, 7-6, and they had losses that were like 7-1.
Well, actually, Toronto was among the league leaders in wins by more than two goals, which is a pretty good barometer of kind of sustained success. So I don't know. I think when you have a team full of youngsters that has a big year, I just don't know if they're going to regress. And Toronto's a great example of what I think people want in Winnipeg in terms of team defense, where the blue liners, yeah, not sexy names, although I think Jake Gardner is severely underrated because of the role that he plays for the team, and I think he was outstanding in the playoff series against Washington, but there's a lot of buy-in with Toronto, and they don't make things easy because it's a five-man unit, not just the blue liners inside their own zone.
Led by 34.
Late February, early March, 5-on-5, the Leafs' defense numbers were the exact same as the Jets. In late February, early March, the biggest difference, the only difference between the Leafs and the Jets.
Defense numbers, what does that mean?
They're 5-on-5. They were.
What, goals surrendered?
Yeah. Ranking. They were, like, the only difference between the Jets and the Leafs were their goaltending percentage and their power play. In late February, early March. Everything else statistically lined up around the same. And it was their power play on the road. For some reason, their power play at home was not working.
And they had didn't they have a top 10 penalty kill too, though? Like their special teams.
They might have won it. Yeah, they might have. Their penalty kill might have been better than. But I remember 5-on-5. It was a relatively the same as the Jets, save for goaltending.
But that's
percentage.
Good though. The Jets had good 5-on-5. All right. There's nothing wrong with what the Jets did 5-on-5 last year.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got them regressing. I don't like their defense. And I think the system that they play is really hard to sustain. And Montreal to me, guys, I don't.
How dare you say a Mike Babcock team is going to regress? A young team.
Well,
You might be subject to have to spend a little time in the clink for suggesting a Mike Babcock team is going to regress.
I'm not Mike Commodore. But I don't think that Mike Babcock is. I think Mike Babcock is a top five coach in this league, probably top three. I don't think he's God like everybody else does.
You're just little. Maybe you're upset because they might pee on the parade of Alberta.
No, I don't. Hey, having known him for a long time, like a long time, and I really, really like Mike Babcock, he also rubs some guys the wrong way. And there's some guys in Toronto.
Probably most of them.
I could see this not going well.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Where personality wise, he's going to clash with the majority of whatever roster he's on. But
and I don't know his players well enough or at all to say who. But I don't know like if.
But if you're winning, if you're winning, and if there's a direction the team's going, I don't care how rough around the edges the head coach is, the guys will follow if you're winning, man. It's when things start going bad that's where trouble hits.
And you look at, I mean, Anaheim, now Detroit, now Toronto. Like, that's a pretty extended period of time where it's been real, real strong success, right? Like, that's like three franchises in a row now. not to mention all the international accolades he's piled up. I don't think Mike Babcock is a big worry for the Leafs.
Like I said, I like him. I think he's a great coach. I don't know if this is going to go as smoothly this year as it did. And I don't think it went overly smoothly.
They win the Atlantic.
They're a goaltending injury away from being in real trouble. Like, we talk about their defense.
That is true.
Freddie has any issue at all, this could go south real quick for Toronto. And that being said, I like Toronto. Like, I think they're forwards, and I've said this all last year, they're prospects. They've lost Leipzig to Las Vegas, but I think having watched the Marlies 2 years ago, they have a very bright future. But
and I tell you what, the king of they're a goaltender injury away from disaster is not the Toronto Maple Leafs, my friend.
La Belle Provence.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
There's a lot of teams that are in trouble.
So that's why I wrestled with them on who's better, like, because I don't know what's going on in Montreal in their depth either, but... Like, to that point exactly, an injury there and their defense corps, what's that going to look like? And that where does Marleau fit in, too? Like, I like the Marleau signing.
The back of the net. He'll score a bunch. Are you kidding me?
We'll take a break here, and we'll get to Andrew Harris of the Bombers, who hosts the Calgary Stampeders in their home opener coming up on Friday. We'll do that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Roberts weighed in on Twitter, and he ranks the Jets 1. Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Vancouver.
Pass the Kool-Aid.
Mason will improve Jets greatly from Robert. Thanks for listening, Robert.
I wish I had there's a lot of Homer in that view, with respect, man.
Although, it wouldn't surprise me to see the Jets finish with the most points out of all the Canadian teams. Like, they can do it. I just don't have a lot of faith in it right now.
It wouldn't surprise you if the Jets ended up with more points than Calgary and Edmonton, for instance?
Let me rephrase that. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Jets get to 100 points this year.
That's a much different statement.
I said let me rephrase it. That's why I switched things up a little bit.
Blue Bombers host the Calgary Stampeders this Friday night in their home opener, a Manuk Denture Blue Bomber game day. Kicks it all off for you Friday night at 5:30, leading into the battle with the Stampeders. Running back Andrew Harris was facing the media yesterday as they returned to the practice field, and he was asked about the Stamps' defense, and he made the point that it's awfully similar to Saskatchewan's.
I mean, they pretty much run the same defense structure that Chris Jones does. A lot of the guys that are on that defensive staff, you know, were with Chris Jones, so they do a lot of the same fronts. That he does when he blitzes. And, I mean, Calgary's the same way. Some days they'll come out and pressure you and blitz you, and then some other days they'll just drop and make you play and take what you can. So, I mean, we're getting prepared for all angles and all things. And you with great teams like that, you just never know what they're going to throw at you. So, again, if they're pressuring us and blitzing us and giving us different looks, you know, that's what we get prepared for, because those are the tougher ones. And then if they're going to sit back and make us try to, you know, get their check downs and the short routes and make plays and break tackles. And we got to be ready for that too. So, I mean, again, Calgary, we've got a lot of respect for them. You know, one of the best teams in the league, and you know, it starts with their defense. And we want to stay in the field. You know, you can never be too comfortable with having an offense with Bo Levi Mitchell running it. And so we've got to be on the field as long as possible as an offense.
Andrew Harris discussing the defense of the Calgary Stampeders. Is that true? Do you think they? Do you agree with Andrew about comparing to Saskatchewan, given that, you know, Calgary's given up 30-plus points first 2 weeks to an Ottawa team?
Well, if Andrew Harris is saying that they're similar, then you have to believe that they're similar. They're studying game film like crazy. The one thing on the back end here for the for Calgary is Harris, Singleton, Richardson. Any of those names ring a bell? That's their linebacking group right there. But DBs, Burnett, Evans, Bell, Wall, Campbell. It's not like when you hear, like, you know, Johnson, Hughes. Right? Those are names you can associate with the Calgary Stampeders up on that D-line, but the back end of the Calgary Stampeder defense, there's been great turnover here. You're looking at 2 or 3 years of experience for their linebackers. None are really household names yet, I dare say, and you just kind of wonder if the Bombers, you would suspect that they will be able to take advantage of, as you were saying, Jim, the team that has surrendered the second most yards against in the couple of weeks here in the CFL. A team that's offering up 362.5 yards per game in the air to the Ottawa Redblacks. It looks like there's going to be some opportunity for the offense, but I don't think, as we're going to be saying for the vast majority of the season, I don't think it's the offense that's going to be of concern or in question during the course of this game. We can figure the Bombers are going to get their fair share of points. How much damage is going to be done on the other side of the ball with Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam? The ultimate matchup nightmare. You want to emphasize stopping Jerome Messam so he doesn't gouge you and dominate you with the clock and the possession? You're going to load up the box and try and contain Jerome Messam? Then what does Bo Levi Mitchell do to you when you're emphasizing the run? And if you're going to emphasize Bo Levi Mitchell's contributions and try and take away a bunch of his passing, then Jerome Messam's going to gouge you between the tackles. It's tough, and I really wonder. It's going to be a tremendous test. As gentle of an introduction into the season, the Saskatchewan Roughriders were for the Winnipeg Blue Bomber defense, the most hardcore and brutal now. Does that spectrum get covered in facing the Calgary Stampeders?
Well, and it's going to be up to some of those newcomers in the secondary to see how they can adjust in their second game. Like you got your first taste of real game action now. Maybe you haven't figured out the CFL game just yet, but you kind of got that first one under your belt now. Now it's time for the Rock Carmichaels and some of the newcomers to just improve a little bit. Like, don't give up too much. And you know, Saskatchewan is no Calgary. No one's going to mistake that. But they've got a pretty good receiving core out there. You know, when you look at Daron Carter and Roosevelt, and even Nick Dembski's had a hell of a start to the season. He had a great week one, and then he had that long touchdown catch in week two. So it's not like, I know Calgary's no slouch, you know, with their pass catchers as well. But, you know, maybe getting that first one under your belt helps the Bomber secondary come back a little bit. But it's going to, I still think and I still maintain that the secondary is not talented enough to do that on their own. The front four is going to have to be outstanding every single game. Doing that against Calgary, though, is it's a little bit of a different issue as opposed to Saskatchewan.
I tell you what's super scary is Bo Levi Mitchell and the offensive coordinator, Dickinson, everybody watching that game film all week, looking at the mistakes of Carmichael, the combination of the work with Alexander on that left side there. And you don't think Bo Levi Mitchell is going to feast? I mean, we're going to find out real soon if those guys come out and sort of catch some traction early and settle themselves and contribute in a positive manner, or Bo Levi Mitchell rips them apart.
I do agree. Like, even Milt said that yesterday, Calgary's defense isn't as good as it has been. I think there's some opportunity there, like Andrew Harris did, but the game plan has to, again, as he mentioned there, keep Bo Levi and the offense off the field. Like, get some sustained drives, work that defense. If you can find some holes in it, keep the defense on the field a little bit longer than allowing the offense to. It's going to be real interesting. We'll talk more Bombers and Stamps at 8 o'clock. Darren Bombing's going to join us. Up next, we hear from the Winnipeg Jets' newest goalie, Steve Mason, on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon.
including on Friday's Big Show here on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki in the Royal Sports Power Hour. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. NHL news and notes to come, and let's get into some of the audio from Steve Mason, the newest Winnipeg Jets goalie, signed a two-year deal averaging $4.1 million per season with the Jets on Saturday during free agency. Of course, he joined the afternoon ride yesterday with the Hustler and our very own Brandon Rewicki from the Big Show, and he talked about the goalie platoon idea.
What are your thoughts on the goalie platoon situation with teams in the NHL, and is that something you're comfortable with?
You know what, I think as long as there's communication in terms of from a head coach to goaltenders and, you know, as to what their plans are, rather than keeping guys in the dark, I think that's the most important thing. You know, you're always going to have a goaltender, I believe, that is viewed to or is expected to have a little bit of a heavier workload. But, you know, I believe you have to have a good relationship with your goaltender partner. You know, in the NHL today, you need to have two good goaltenders that give the team a chance to win every single night. And I believe Connor and I will have that this season for the Jets. But you know, I think the biggest thing in terms of platoons or having a number one guy, I think the most important thing is just to have the communication with the coach's staff. So, you know, there's no gray areas or anything like that.
So that's his thoughts on the goalie platoon idea.
It's... You know, if Mason does, it's going to be, if Connor Hellebuyck is pushed aside here, and he's going to feel like that, if Mason is the starter coming out of camp, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? That's a great motivating factor. It will be interesting to see if Hellebuyck gets 3-4 games in over some time frame and is sparkling, and if Mason does struggle. Like, I don't think either way. Regardless of who starts the game or starts the season, I don't think it's certainly nothing set in stone or locked in here. Either guy is going to have an opportunity to grab it and go with it. Whoever is sort of going to be 1B or the backup, however we want to define the guy on the bench most often, will have an opportunity if there is a stumble. One place that's going to be critical that Steve Mason plays at a higher level at is in shorthanded situations. And this was he struggled mightily the last couple of years, or last 3 years really, in Philadelphia shorthanded with save percentages of .845, .822, .840 in shorthanded situations. And I read a breakdown of what he does in the net by In Goal magazine, and they were saying how he just has a little bit of trouble adjusting when the offenses get that much more settled, tends to come back into his net and that sort of thing. And Connor Hellebuyck, that was also a place for him last year. When we're talking about an area of the team that needs to improve a great deal, Connor Hellebuyck has struggled to some degree shorthanded as well. Now, I know that the numbers obviously shorthanded are always lower, but even within the realm of shorthanded save percentage and the stats involved here, one of these two goalies, that's going to play a big role into one of these two goalies playing and contributing at a higher level, and certainly the Jets are going to be a part of that with the penalty kill in front of them. But when you highlight the importance of the penalty kill this year, the players, the goaltending, that all's got to, it has to come together. Do we all agree if the Jets aren't in the top half of the league in penalty killing, there's no chance to make the playoffs this year? Like, is that going to be one of the true indicators? Because it was one of the sore spots. That's one of the spots that unquestionably has to improve dramatically.
Yeah, 80% is kind of the minimum. Right, and I think 80% last year was 17th, 18th or so in the NHL. So you're talking, I mean, yeah, I think that's a fair statement. You have to get to 15th, which isn't, and it sounds like a big leap from where they were, because I think they finished 25th.
Or 26th, yeah.
But percentage-wise, it's not an outlandish leap, no. Right? Like, you're just talking
and
about...
But that's the NHL, right? Like, fair, when you're talking yeah. about percentage points, it's always just 2-3 that separate winners from losers for a lot of stats like that. But boy, a huge role that's going to play here for the Jets.
I'd go further and say they have to just take less penalties. Like they've
do,
got to
do one or the other.
They've
right?
got to be more disciplined, and you know, I think that will they just have to be and I
you expect that though. Which is easier for the Jets to take less penalties and actually become more disciplined, or to kill the penalties better? I don't see Paul Maurice changing their mindset of this team, and plus with the individuals involved, all of a sudden they're all going to peel off these seasons of, you know, the stick work and everything else that comes into play. I have trouble believing that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it can. I think it's a coachable thing. I think they can be more disciplined and cut that down. But both have to get better for sure. Steve Mason was on the afternoon ride here on TSN 1290 yesterday afternoon. He also talked about what he expects his role to be, or the expected role of him.
Yeah, you know, I had a great conversation, obviously with Chevy, but Paul Maurice and Wade Flaherty as well. You know, Paul Maurice was very upfront and just saying that, you know, he was looking for a guy that's going to come in and help the team win hockey games. And, you know, I believe I can be that guy. I believe I can play a large role for this organization moving forward. And they were very open, just saying that, you know, we want you to come in and help us win hockey games. We're not going to, you know, we have a team that obviously is built with a bunch of scoring offensive threats. And I think, you know, when you look at where this position is scoring, I think they were probably the eighth or ninth highest scoring team in the league. But is a matter of also keeping the puck out of the net, and they obviously viewed me as a good fix or a good addition to the crease, and I'm just looking forward to you know, having this start with a team that has shown a lot of interest in me. And you know, looking at the situation coming in to work with Connor, you know, he's a young goaltender, and I've been in his shoes before where you come in and have some success early, but it's a difficult league, and you know, I'm looking forward to helping him along and you know, helping him grow as a goaltender as well.
It doesn't sound to me like anything's been promised to him.
No, and I don't think they can promise anything to him. Can they? I would love to see the behind the walls thing. Like, how do they have the depth chart? They just have those two names beside each other, or Connor Hellebuyck? Do you give him the even? I remember being on top of a depth chart, and I knew that it was a bunch of horse crap when we were in meetings. That I wasn't on top of it, and I just wonder how they got that whole thing situated. But yeah, this is going to be a bunch of fun, isn't it? And it's a torture session right now for us to wait until the puck drops.
I, you know, honestly though, I think I would rather start the season with Mason 1 and Hellebuyck 2. You know, if you're looking at it from Hellebuck's perspective, like, get him hungry. Make him want the crease. Like, don't he, not that he was necessarily.
You don't think he's like that after Mason gets signed. He's like that, no?
Well, crank it up a little bit then. Like, let's make it 110%. Let's make it 11 on the Spinal Tap amp, right? Like, I think that's a good spot for the Jets to be in, because Mason has that experience of being a starter. Like, he's done it pretty damn well his whole career in the NHL. And I kind of like that, the internal push between the two there. If you have Hellebuyck in the backup spot to start, and then you kind of let things play out organically moving forward there, and then it becomes maybe a bit more of an open competition after that.
You know, it's funny, because this whole conversation reminds me of talking to Scott Arneil back when he was the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Steve Mason came in, and I saw him in the offseason. I just said, what do you think this year? And he said, well, our team really depends on how Mason does. And he said he's just a young goalie. So he had a really good, I believe, first season, but I'm wondering about, and things went off the rail in the second, and it cost Scott Arneil his job.
Second and third, yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't blaming Mason, but he was just saying, like, as a young goaltender, even if they have a good season, it could be another year or two or maybe even three before they sort of put it all together for that consistency. And it really kind of mirrors, you know, Mason is a guy that's coming in here and going to play some games and likely be the starter in my mind, but it really mirrors what Connor Hellebuck's going through. And you know, I think that can only benefit him, and maybe it was one of the main reasons they went after him so hard, as he said in that quote there, that, you know, they showed an enormous amount of interest in me right off the start.
I don't know what mirrors what you're talking about there for mirroring Hellebuyck. Like, in his first year, Mason was 9-16, and then the next 3 years, he went 901, 901, 894. So I don't know the experience there or the similarities there, the connection that you're making. I think it's entirely possible Connor Hellebuyck has a 915 and does bring it all together this year. I wonder, like, the work ethic and all the rest of it, we're kind of touching on it a little bit, but when you got somebody else there, if Connor Hellebuyck feels like this is his job, you know, if he's in that mindset, like, hey, I'm the starter for the Jets here, and now you sign this veteran coming, like, the level of crank up from a competitive standpoint, it's going to be real neat to see what their relationship is. And I'm sure on the surface they'll have, you know, they'll say all the right things and they'll act the right way. But boy, right under the skin, and you know, been in those situations where you're on the surface, you do what you have to do to keep it amicable and all those sorts of things. But you want that cat out of the way. You want that job. To have two guys going after the top job like that's a really compelling story.
And you kind of touched on maybe the magic number for this team this year, a 915 save percentage, which, you know, like is just a shade above league average, right? Like it's not this outlandish number that the Jets need to aspire to, but if they can get to that, and if both goalies play around that level, with the amount of goals this team scores, that's all they need from their goaltending, which is like they don't need 920 plus, they don't need top five goaltending in the NHL to make the playoffs this season, which is, you know, that's why I think people feel so comfortable about this moving forward, where you get a bit of improvement from Hellebuck, even if you don't expect a whole lot, but get into the 9-10 area, and if Mason can give you a 9-15, like it's really hard to imagine this Jets squad getting league average goaltending and not finding a way to grab that extra 7, 8, 9, 10 points they needed to squeak into the playoffs.
Yeah. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, 17 minutes past the hour. The connection I'm making is Steve Mason came into the league as a rookie and put up a 916 in 61 games. Then he had a 901 in 58 games and a 901 in 54 games. Connor Hellebuck started pro hockey in the American Hockey League, had a 921, 922, 26 games in the show, 918, and then a 907. I'm trying to connect the dots on that. Mason could be a good mentor to say, I know it started out great in pro hockey, and then it sort of regressed. This is sort of the things I went through. This is what I did to sort of turn it around after a couple of years of pro hockey when the numbers just didn't equate to what they did in that first season. I think that's as a 29-year-old, I think he's got some wisdom he can bestow on Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, and I wonder, as a 29-year-old who wants a starting job, how much do you offer up?
Well,
I want the job. I'm going to help you a little bit, kid, but I want this job. This is my job. Go have a seat in the bench and watch how it's done. Like, hey, man, Steve Mason wants Connor Hellebuck to play well, but Steve Mason wants to be the starter.
Well, yeah, but you're not going to not help him?
I'll help him a little. For real. Steve Mason, this is Steve Mason's job, man. He wants the job.
That's well, the crazy
he's
thing.
Not gonna he be has holding the job. His hand. He's not going to be holding his hand and giving him every single, like, you know, when people think he's going to help him a lot and do everything possible to make Connor Hellebuck the very best he could be, really?
Yeah, I do. I think he's going to help him a lot.
Well, if I was in Steve Mason's spot, I would not be. And I've been in similar spots, and I wasn't helping guys coming in trying to take my job. And I think most wickedly competitive athletes would be closer to my sort of mindset than, hey, buddy, come on. Get way better. Get better than me. It's your don't take the job.
No. So did Blake Wheeler not help Mark Scheifele develop
as a
player?
That's totally different, Jim. Come on, man. That's not a good example.
Ole Jokinen didn't help Mark Scheifele
get
better as a center?
Those are horrible examples.
Mark Scheifele took Ole Jokinen's position.
So you can bounce down the depth chart. It's a total different conversation.
All right. I think he's going to help him a lot. We'll hear more from Steve Mason in our next segment, and Paul Edmonds coming up as well at the bottom of the hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic, Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. This is a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kids Sport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome. Includes 18 holes of golf, cart rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink, freebies, plus chances to win very cool prizes. There will also be a fun plan for select holes throughout the course, hosted by our friends at the Pint Winnipeg, Royal Sports, Santa Lucia Pizza, J&M Window and Door Company, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited,
The Viscount Gort Hotel and United Firefighters of Winnipeg Local 867. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. Register now at tsn1290.ca. That is going to be a lot of fun. August 15th, once again. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show, 23 minutes past the hour. Back to Steve Mason's interview that he had on the afternoon ride yesterday here on TSN 1290, and he was asked about the Jets team as a whole that he's come into.
Well, there's not just one thing. There's numerous, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Jet now, but in the last number of seasons, they were always a team that stuck out in terms of having to pay attention to them. You look up and down that roster with the forwards up front, even the defensemen as well. It's a team that is offensively gifted. It's a team for a goaltender on the opposition that you really, really have to pay attention because there are so many guys that can make you pay. So, you know, it's just endless. And obviously, when you have a young guy named Patrick Laine coming into the league and scoring, what he almost have 40 goals this year, you know, that's impressive in itself. So this organization's built for having success now, but also in the future. And that's what's exciting for me coming in here is coming into a team that is ready to take that next step. And I'm excited to be a part of that.
It's interesting because, as he said, not just because I'm a Jet now, but that's what we've been hearing around the league. And that's what I hear often when I chat up a few players. I don't get the chance to talk to a lot of them, but they're like, man, this Winnipeg team is, you know, sort of fans have been hearing that locally. In the community, we hear that a lot. But they're waiting for it to take that next step, waiting for it to take that next step. It's not soon enough for some fans, and I get that. But it seems to be that's a sentiment amongst players as well, that one of these days, one of these seasons.
And I wonder which is, I think the fan base is more restless or see that jump. And we all, like, we've talked about this after the UFA sort of season passed by with Kulikov and Mason coming here. And you look at the lineup and if there's a weakness, please let me know where it is. It looks like everything's shored up and ready to go forward here. And now this is when things get hardcore, heavy-duty, serious, right? Now if this team comes out and struggles out of the gate or they aren't playing at a strong level defensively, if there is that continuing lack of discipline, if they continue with the struggle and the penalty kill, the seat could get real warm in a hurry for Coach Maurice if there is an underachieving element and aspect of this team within the first 20 games. And let's hope for everyone involved that doesn't happen and they come out of the gate like lions.
And we talked about this with Steve Mason. Like, if there's an attractive job for a goaltender and you want to play some games, this is an attractive team to want to play for.
No doubt about it, right? Because, I mean, if you're talking about maybe trying to get that second contract after this one, I mean, if you take this team to the playoffs and, you know, we see, I know a lot of people say you need experience in the NHL playoffs, but we see a lot of young teams, too, go pretty far, right? Like, even the Oilers last year and their kind of first run with their new kids went into the second round and probably should have been in the conference finals, right? So, like, if you could take a team a couple rounds into the playoffs, you become a free agent 2 years from now, you're looking at a heck of a payday if you're Steve Mason. So it is a great situation. And I think it was Bruce Boudreau, right, that said top six forwards in the NHL.
Yeah.
Don't know if he's seen a scarier one than the Jets. Which I think is kind of a backhanded compliment, looking backhanded, but it also kind of serves that, yeah, like this team, talent is not an issue. There's a lot of good teams in the NHL where high-end talent is something that they kind of crave and look for, but, you know, the hardest thing in the NHL is to find that, and now it's just, that's Paul Maurice's main job here, is to, can he mold that into an effective five-man unit in all three phases of the game.
And I checked to see if Bruce Boudreau says that in every city he visits to the media, and he does not. So he might have before, but that I remember that comment when Minnesota came in late in the season. But we'll take a break here on The Big Show on the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. Mr. Paul Edmonds joins us next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos, and an abundance of three cheese queso beverages, including a sampling of Tallgrass vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, an iGrill 2 digital app-connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of 1 week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including July 20th and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very soon. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki, the Royal Sports Power Hour, NHL news and notes still to come in this hour. And right now, we're going to talk with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds. And this segment with Paul Edmonds is brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet on McPhillips. This month at Gauthier, 20% off is back on select vehicles. Plus, buy a new or used vehicle and get a trip to Vegas. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you today?
Not bad, gentlemen. Just kind of rolling along. Weather's very nice. Yeah, no, it's all good.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And, have a lovely no.
Talk
we got
to you next week.
Lots to get to today. Lots to get to, and we'll just start with the additions. Five players in total the Jets signed, but clearly the two that were designated so far until training camp ends anyway for the Jets are Dmitry Kulikov and Steve Mason. Your thoughts on the additions?
Well, they filled the organizational needs that they needed at the National Hockey League level. So. They went on and got two established players. Didn't overpay, didn't extend themselves too much on term. I think very good deals for both player and organization. And I think the Winnipeg Jets had a major upgrade this past weekend when free agent frenzy was underway, and they were very involved. And I'm sure that one would say that they were more involved than ever before in the 6 years of the history of the franchise here in relocating to Winnipeg. We don't know that for sure because sometimes you're really involved and things just don't line up and you don't get a deal consummated. But in this particular case, there was two glaring holes that the Jets had to address, goaltender, left side defenseman. They got both. They got good players in both those situations. They ticked all the boxes, I think, and I think the Winnipeg Jets are a better team for it. Now, does that guarantee wins over the 82-game schedule? No, but I think what it's done is it's filled a couple of holes. It's made you a little bit deeper in certain areas. It's given you a better chance to win, and I think everybody that's a veteran-labeled guy in that dressing room has seen what management has done. Now it's up to them to get it done on the ice from October to April.
Paulie, when you look at the Central, and you can neatly carve Colorado away like fat on steak or something like that, and then look at the remaining six teams. Can you ever recall, or can you recall since the Jets have been in the Central, it being so muddy? Like, you could darn near literally see those teams in any spot within those top six spots.
Well, I was thinking and kind of preparing for coming on today, again, the question being, okay, so who, if the Jets have improved, as you say, Edmonds, who do they knock out? And you're absolutely right. I mean, first off, when we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, I thought that St. Louis was a bit of a weak sister, and then they go right at the draft and make a bunch of moves and appear to improve their team. And, you know, Chicago was wheeling and dealing, and they've still got a really good core there. And Nashville's certainly trying to get better and get a little bit more scoring, although they lose Colin Wilson and certainly James Neal. But Minnesota, you know, they trade and they make some deals as well. Colorado, I think, is certainly the weak team that is still in a rebuilding, retooling stage. So, yeah, where do you go? Where do you look for the weakness there? Where do you find that team or teams that the Winnipeg Jets are going to vault? Well, I think it's going to be important, as it always is, for a couple of things for the teams that come out of the Central as playoff teams. To do two things. One, win at home, and two, win in your own division. And that betters your chances, certainly, of being one of the better teams to come out of your division, whether you're one of the top three or if you qualify with one of the two wild card spots. So I think that, you know, we've said it before, and it, I think borders on cliche, but every game is going to be so important for the Winnipeg Jets that they play this year, and especially when they're in their own division and especially when they're playing at home. They have to really make home a place where, you know, they've got a 750 winning percentage here, something that they've not really had since the team returned here. So it will be incumbent on them to find that comfortable place where it's difficult for other teams to play in and where they have the advantage. So the one thing that you can do to make sure that you're better than some of the teams in your own division is, A, beat those teams on a regular basis and make sure that you're winning more than your fair share at home. So I guess that's what the intrigue will be this season coming up for sure, is every time that the Winnipeg Jets play Minnesota or Chicago or Dallas, there's another team that's improved, or even Colorado. I mean, those are points that you need to guarantee yourselves, even going into those games, that you need to have against the Avs, and you can't let things slip away. So, you know, it'll be a real interesting season, probably the most interesting coming up for all those reasons, and not just because there's a honeymoon with a team returning here. It's a matter of building points when it really matters, and this year it really does for the Winnipeg Jets, who I think have a chance to qualify for the playoffs for the second time in 4 years.
Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, joining us on the Big Show, 39 minutes past the hour. What is your thoughts heading into this training camp on where Steve Mason is? Is he the starter? Is it up for grabs? Or is Connor Hellebuck? Where do you see this sort of once game one rolls around playing out?
Yeah, I was listening to you guys yesterday, and you were talking about whether, you know, Steve Mason's the starter on opening night. I think that was talked about as well yesterday in the afternoon. There's no doubt in my mind that Steve Mason is the number one goaltender here. Steve Mason wasn't brought in to just tutor and mentor Connor Hellebuck. I think at the end of this two-year contract that Connor Hellebuck will be a better goaltender because he spent two more years in the National Hockey League without all the pressures of being a number one guy. He's going to learn from Steve Mason. Steve Mason's coming here to take over and assume a number one job. Now, he could lose it because his play would dictate that, and now you're in a situation where Connor Hellebuck maybe rolls in for a little while. But this day going forward, and from the day the Winnipeg Jets signed him to a contract on the weekend, moving ahead until he plays himself out of the job, he's the number one guy. Does that mean 50-plus games? Yeah, probably does. Look at the past performance sheet. I think Steve Mason knows he's coming here to be the number one guy, but also he understands, and we heard this when he was talking to us on the station, either via a conference call or yesterday on our station, the one-on-one, and he understands that, and he's done it before. He talked about Michael Neuwirth, certainly with Philadelphia, and Brandon would know this. He's kind of helped a lot of young guys before in his career. I mean, he's coming up to his 10th year in the National Hockey League. It's happened. It's going to happen. There's two of you, usually under the cap era. There's a veteran guy and a younger guy. So you're always sort of talking, certainly if you're the veteran guy with the younger guy and showing them the ropes, or they're learning through osmosis by watching you. The other thing that I thought was interesting was he said, I'm a real good practice player in terms of my practice habits. And that's one thing we heard Paul Maurice talk about last year, was sometimes the practice habits of certain individuals weren't very good, and it relayed itself certainly into a game situation. Well, Steve Mason, by his own admission, said that he practices hard in preparation for games. And I think that you're going to see some of that maybe wear on to Connor Hellebuck and just how to be a better pro. Not to say that Connor wasn't. It's just that these are the things that you do when you're a 10-year veteran, and this is how I got here, and this is how I've been able to stay here. But there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that Steve Mason has come here to be the number one goaltender, and I would dare say that Steve Mason will be the starting goaltender on opening night for the Winnipeg Jets as well.
Paulie, now that they've got the personnel sort of sewn up, and it looks, the depth chart looks real nice, there's a couple of glaring aspects of the Jets on the ice that they need to improve, and the penalty kill, without question, is one of them. Ultimately, needing more saves for sure, but outside of that, what point or two on the PK do you need to see improve with this team?
Well, it's funny that you isolate that one because some people would say that the power play needs to improve as well. So, you know, I mean, both specialty teams have not been, you know, top five, certainly, for the Winnipeg Jets in the last number of years or even since they rolled back here. I mean, they flirted with good penalty kill or decent power play at times, but nothing's been very consistent. Paul Maurice has always indicated, Troy, that in order for you to really push yourself to be a better team and win some of those games that we talked about, certainly in the Central Division, against teams that you need to beat to get into the postseason, if you had one or the other going well, which would be, and he has always said penalty kill. So if you isolate that, then yeah, it needs to be better. And I think, number one, you're going to have a guy that's probably going to be a little bit better in net. Let's just say that. And that's going to help for sure as well. I'll be interested to see how aggressive they are on the puck pursuit with pressure on the puck this year. Those are a couple of things that I think that the Winnipeg Jets can certainly can get after a little bit and improve their penalty kill from the standpoint that they are a quick, fast team. I'd like to see a little bit more of that on the penalty kill and pressure the puck for sure from that standpoint. And, you know, there's going to be things like shot blocking and defending down low to make sure that if you get into that one-on-one battle that's on the penalty kill around the goal line or in the corners or behind your net, that you're coming out with the puck so that you can rim it out or you can find a seam and send it out and send it all the way down. So, you know, there's the one-on-one battles. There's, I guess, and this is part and parcel, there's being quick to the puck and pressuring the puck carrier, whoever has it, certainly shot blocking. And then, of course, making sure that your goaltender makes the save and the rebound control is there for you to gather up the rebound or the second shot or the second opportunity, take that away and send it down the ice. So there's all things that need to work in tandem, certainly, for it to be better. But you're absolutely right. It has to improve this year, and I think that's incumbent on the coaching staff to make sure that they've got a scheme in place and then it's executed by the players and the players know what they're doing from practicing.
The Jets still shopping for something, Paul, and in particular, a lot of questions about Jágr, Doan, Iginla. I don't know if those are attainable, but are they still looking to add some things before the summer's over?
You know, Jimmy, that's kind of funny because I kind of felt that they were sort of done after the weekend, and they've addressed everything they needed, as we talked about, and it's kind of let's go, let's play the 82, and then you start thinking, okay, what if you had to add, and you've certainly got a lot of money left. You've got about $11 million left in cap space. Now, are you saving that for somebody else or for something else, like one of those veteran guys that could still help you, that could still be a presence, could still certainly provide a little bit of offense? And what would they do in your room for you? And, you know, just make everybody feel a little bit better and a little bit bigger if you had a Shane Doan that's been around for, you know, 20 years, or a Jaromir Jágr who can still get it done well into his 40s, you know, that could be interesting. I don't know. Or are you saving that money maybe for something to add at the deadline or both? So, you know, there's flexibility here, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets. I wouldn't say that there's a great appetite to go out and add another piece here right now. I think they're pretty comfortable with what they have. But it has got me thinking, and I wouldn't be totally shocked if a name like that, a veteran name, a gray beard name like that kind of showed up in the Winnipeg Jets roster and they took a chance and signing a guy like that for 1 year. Other teams have done it. It seems to have worked out before. I don't know if the Winnipeg Jets are interested in doing that, but I would not be shocked if something like that happened. They certainly have the money to do it, and they certainly would have the space certainly on their third or fourth line to be able to do it at the cost probably of sending somebody that's trying to push in from the AHL back down to the AHL for the year. I don't know if they want to do that or not, but I wouldn't be surprised. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that because I was thinking about that just the other day as well.
Wouldn't that would excite? That would be a real neat impact on the fan base if you bring in like a third line, one of those cats. That would be really cool.
Well, and I just was it hit me, I guess maybe Monday or even yesterday as we were talking about guys. We went off the air, and I just was like, well, I mean, there's still some room to augment, and if there's something out there at the right price for a year. You know, we all know that Morrissey, Trouba, all those guys need contracts next year. But if you could augment something this year, why wouldn't you? And I like Paul's idea there, too, as you mentioned, Paul, just maybe even at the deadline. Everybody loves to have space at the deadline to bring on salary.
Yeah, and I think they put themselves in a pretty good situation to do that. I mean, you know, as prorated contracts go, I mean, you're only going to have more than your $11 million if you don't do anything else between now and then for cap space when you get there to the deadline. So they're in a real good situation here. Now, you don't really want to spend right to the cap here because, as you mentioned, you've got a couple of big contracts that certainly are coming up. You also have to get Connor Hellebuck signed. I mean, he's RFA here as well. So, you know, and Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev. So there's some other contracts that you have to take care of this year. But then you also have to look to next year, and you know that Jacob Trouba is going to command, and deservedly so, a lot of money in term, if truly is he going to stay here. And then also you've got Josh Morrissey coming out of his ELC as well, and you know, you've got to give him a nice raise as well. So you're always with this an eye to the future. But right now, the Winnipeg Jets have a pretty good situation financially for them to add another piece, whether it's now, a little bit into the season, or certainly at the deadline, without breaking the bank, knowing that they have to sign a couple of key pieces going into next year.
Great stuff, Paul. We appreciate your time, as always. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, guys. Talk to you later. Enjoy the week, and go Blue.
Thanks so much, Paulie. Good fishing, man.
Yeah, good fishing. NHL News and Notes. We will talk Blue Bombers at 8 o'clock with Darren Bomey, but NHL News and Notes are next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open, and event tickets for non-participants go on sale now. Taking the stage this year is multi-award-winning Sam Roberts Band. Proceeds from this event will be supporting Kids Sport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour. TSN 1290's Big Show and NHL News and Notes time, and we'll start with Mr. Nail Yakupov to Colorado Avalanche on a one-year deal. Nail in the coffin?
Absolutely. Just further cements where they're going to end up, and part of the tank. Is this the official sign of tank? The tank?
No.
And you know what? We were off air. We were talking about, I wonder why this team didn't or that team didn't possibly take a run at Yakupov. That speaks volumes, I suppose, for Yakupov, huh?
It must, right? Because, I mean, he's still only 23 years old, right? So you think maybe there's some untapped potential in him? It's odd that, you know, he almost won Rookie of the Year in 2012. He had 31 points in 48 games, like right out of the gate. So it looked like there was, like, after the first year, there was almost no concerns about where this kid was going. And it's so just, like, it has to be off-ice related somehow, you would imagine, right? Like, I just don't get how you go as an 18, 19-year-old, 31 and 48, and then you just fall off the map completely after that.
Yeah, from what I hear, he thinks he's greater than he is. He thinks that he deserves a certain amount of ice time. I thought maybe going to St. Louis and being a healthy scratch would change that, and maybe it will. As a 23-year-old, it's not a bad risk.
I thought it was perfect for Vegas, a team like Vegas. Like, what does Vegas have to lose? And at most, you get this potential gem, right? It feels like you go to Colorado, and it's just this graveyard right now.
But he must be a real beauty, boys.
Could you imagine Gerard Gallant coaching Nail Yakupov?
That's a fair point. I didn't. Yeah,
I'd like to.
That might have been brought up to Gallant, and it was squashed pretty quickly.
Yeah, it could have been. Ilya Kovalchuk is staying in Russia for one more year after all the hoopla, after all the I want to come back, this and that, his prerogative. But if that's the case, why even delve into this? I guess, you know, you look at it, but it sounded to me like he wanted to come back, and now he's staying for at least another year, and we'll look at it again next year. Like, I guess what I'm trying, I don't like this. Like, yeah, they want to play in the National Hockey League, you don't. It's your prerogative, but.
Well, he does, it seems, but it just the whole, like, the Devils were asking too much once he moved, and things do clear up quite a bit for him next year, right? And then there's also the story, and believe what you will, of Putin and that circle sort of leaning on and putting pressure on him to stay this final year, ultimately for South Korea, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, it makes a lot of sense to me why Kovalchuk wouldn't go. Now you control your destiny, essentially, in free agency next year, especially
totally,
if there's a team he really wants to go to and a trade wasn't able to be worked out, then I can understand him not wanting to go back with the incentive of getting to play in the Olympics and realistically Russia's best chance at a gold medal.
So the Olympics, and then add in the what if I scored 23 points in 82 games and I'm a free agent,
isn't this more on the Devils? Because the Devils, it was up to them to make something happen. They either get something Kovalchuk or they get nothing. And now they end up with nothing.
I know this is lame in pro sports, but doesn't he owe the Devils? Like, you got this massive deal. You walked away from them. Now you want back in the league, but you don't want to play for the team that literally gave you, what was it, $115 million deal?
Yeah, but you gave it back. Who owes who there? That was the whole talk when he left. It was like, this is shady as all. Is all heck and all the rest of it. Devils escaping that contract. Oh, there's nothing owed there.
Yeah, the Devils lost a first-round pick because of the whole situation that went on there. So, if anything, the Devils owed Ilya Kovalchuk a favor, and they should have moved him to where he wanted to, because he saved them from a real, real ugly situation.
But the Devils really crapped the bed here by getting nothing. They should have been more open-minded to what they're getting for him, because now they're left nothing, holding the bag, nothing.
Tomorrow we're going to delve into, if they don't sign anywhere, Yager, Ginn, Lindon, and where they should go or if they go anywhere, and would it be here if there's any interest in that. Up next, we'll talk Bombers with Darren Bombing on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally friends and family in your community to make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 can make it an even better place to live. Record a video telling us about how your hometown would spend the $25,000 and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon on Friday, July the 14th. Once again, the deadline for entry is Friday, July the 14th at noon. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July 24th, and the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Merit Contractors. For more information and official rules and regulation, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. And one more hour till the open phones on the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about with you, the listeners. Thanks for tuning in and welcome back into the program. TSN 1290's very own Bomber on the Bombers, Darren Bombing. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm well, fellas. Good morning. How are you?
Doing excellent. And I guess we'll just start with the Bombers after that double overtime win, return to the practice field yesterday. How would everything go?
Well, they're healthy. That's a very positive sign when you can start the season late and emerge from your first game relatively unscathed. Kevin Fogg left that football game in the first half. The team said he suffered a lower body injury and did not return to that football game, but he was on the practice field yesterday, didn't fully participate, he was out there, he had his helmet for a little bit, was running around. I don't expect it to be a serious injury. They want to find out over the next couple days if he's going to be ready to go, but he's really the only player from that game. There's a bunch of guys that went down in that game, but they all returned. Tristan Apollo-Ugo, Jamarcus Hardrick, Mo Leggett, they all came back and they were all on the practice field yesterday. So especially with the late start to the season and entering the season with only one significant major injury in Bruce Johnson, who has an issue with his hand right now and is on the 6-game injured list, this is a very positive sign. I would say the Blue Bombers are the healthiest team in the Canadian Football League right now, and they're going to need to be, because this coming Friday night, you talk about a tough test, the Calgary Stampeders, I have them atop the CFL right now. They're playing better football than anybody, and then they're going to enter Investors Group Field on Friday and give the Bombers their toughest test.
That's a provocative statement considering what Edmonton's maybe doing right now. But I got to ask you, the Bombers,
They struggle in the red zone in this game against Saskatchewan, going 1-for-3 in the red zone, DB, but make up for that with their big plays. They had four big plays during the course of the game, 120-plus yard rush and three plays, passing plays, over 30-plus yards. So you wonder, the big plays thing, we saw Ottawa convert a lot of that on Calgary. You wonder, from a big play standpoint, what Winnipeg might be successful with against Calgary.
Yeah, the big play is a positive sign. To have, Weston Dressler do what he did in that game, nearly 150 yards receiving, the two touchdowns in 26 seconds, the first being an 87-yard strike right down the seam of that football field, and the Bombers being able to get back into that game with those big plays, the 31-3 scoring streak that they had to, down 17-3, and then to go from that point and outscore the Rough Riders 31-3 to get back in that football game. Six consecutive scoring drives in less than 7 minutes. I know you and I had a lot of fun during the post-game show where I called a seven-minute streak of football the turning point in that football game. But to me, without that streak of dominance from this Blue Bombers offense, I don't think they would have been in this football game. Weston Dressler was a big part of it. And I know you agree with me, too, and that Andrew Harris was a large part of that, too. Nothing crazy jumping off the page with Andrew Harris's numbers in that football game. 13 carries for 57 yards, adding 38 yards in the receiving game as well. Nothing crazy that jumped off the page, but just that, safety valve, that nice, consistent piece of the offense that helps things continue to roll along, I think is just invaluable to Paul LaPolice. They do need to be more consistent in the red zone, but we've been saying this for 13 months now, because Paul LaPolice's offense here in Winnipeg and under Matt Nichols has struggled to score when they're within striking distance. Justin Medlock was perfect, 5-for-5 from field goal range in that football game. He's on pace for 90 field goals this year. 61 last year, broke the all-time record. They need to score more sixes than threes, especially against a team like Bo Levi Mitchell and the Calgary Stampeders. They are going to put up points no matter who they're playing.
Darren Palmy joining us today on the Big Show, TSN 1290, teeing up the Blue Bombers and Calgary Stampeders. The home opener for the Blue and Gold this Friday at Investors Group Field, Minuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day with Bombing and Mr. Westwood and Chris Walby, 5:30 this Friday. Talk about Weston Dressler, named a Shaw CFL Top Performer of the Week.
Yeah, and deservedly so. The other two players that received the nod were both Ottawa Redblacks. Quarterback Trevor Harris threw for 425 yards, was very efficient, and kept Ottawa in that game despite losing a nail biter right down to the finish in Calgary, a really tough place to play. And Deontay Spencer had a long touchdown grab late in that football game to get Ottawa right back in it, and also had a punt return touchdown in that football game. So Weston Dressler amongst very good company in that football game, but I think it was really just an exclamation mark on the fact that it was against his former team. It's been kind of fun. I had a fan point out to me yesterday just to look at social media, look at Twitter and a couple other places of what Rough Rider fans were saying about Weston Dressler before the game. Oh, well, he's been in the league for 10 years. He's too small. He doesn't have it anymore. He's not consistent enough. And then to watch him burn his former team the way he did, to be as dominant as he was at the opening of that new stadium in the city that Dressler still resides in. It really kind of it was fun to read the about face by those fans, because Weston Dressler, yeah, he might be in the league for 10 years, but he has got so much game left in him, and really is one of the more underappreciated players in the CFL. So I'm happy that he got the league recognition for the game he had.
A big question coming into the season and wonder was Sam Hurl. How successful will he be in the middle? And specifically, maybe as it relates to being stout with the run game, it was pretty darn impressive that the Bombers hold the Rough Riders to 20 rushing yards on 10 attempts, a very different test. What a test this week for Sam Hurl.
Yeah, and he was excellent. I asked Mike O'Shea about two players on the defense that I thought played very well, that being Chris Randall and Sam Hurrell. Now, Randall, I call one of the most underrated defensive backs in the league. He did a great job shutting down Daron Carter, less than 70 yards receiving. 36 of those 70 yards from Carter came while he was covered by the two rookies, Brandon Alexander, and in particular, Rock Carmichael, who I'm sure would want to bounce back game after allowing two touchdowns in coverage to Caleb Hawley and the Winnipegger Nick Dembski. But all eyes were on number 10, Sam Hurrell. He won this job at middle linebacker, and there's still a lot of critics out there that whether he should win this job and whether he is up to snuff to be the quarterback of a CFL defense. He proved that and more. He directed traffic well. That was one thing I asked Mike O'Shea about. And, you know, he's a leader on the field. He is in the ear of other players, whether it's Taylor Loeffler or a defensive lineman following a run play. He is there coaching. He is there always mentoring and tutoring and helping, being that communicator. Communication on defense is so key in today's CFL. They like to give different looks to quarterbacks so that coverages change and they can roll coverages from different sides of the field to different receivers. And to have somebody who is that mentally sharp as Sam Hurrell is, I think is something that goes underappreciated in this Blue Bombers defense.
Andrew Harris yesterday was comparing the Calgary defense to the Saskatchewan Roughriders defense. Darren, can the Bombers expose this defense that the Calgary Stampeders have?
Well, they've allowed a lot of yards and a lot of points the first 2 weeks of the season, but they've been playing against a quarterback in Trevor Harris, you know, that I pointed out is really, been really impressive this year. The 31-31 tie in week one, you know, Calgary showed some susceptibility, you know, to the run game. And in week two, the run game as well in their 43-39 win at home to the Red Blacks. They had a lot of broken coverages. You watch that game, it was wide open back and forth. Just when you think things would settle down, something else would happen in a big play. You know, to Troy's point about the big play being the friend of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers this past week, it's going to need to be a friend of theirs this week as well, because there were a lot of broken coverages and opportunities for the Ottawa Red Blacks last week against Calgary, in particular Yak Yards. Finding bubbles in that defense for their receivers to catch the ball, turn up field, and gain positive yardage. That's where they're going to need to expose this Calgary defense. I just talked about communication. You talked to Matt Nichols. He told us yesterday that the Calgary Stampeders defense, because they're veteran-laden and they're so well-coached, that communication is one of their strongest suits. So they're going to throw a lot of different things at Matt Nichols, try to get him off his game. But again, it's going to be Andrew Harris and Nichols' ability to find that bubble and find that open space in the Calgary Stampeders defense that will lead to success on Friday night. It should be a fun one with it being the home opener and set to be beautiful weather at Investors Group Field on Friday.
If Kevin Glenn was as successful as he was against Rock Carmichael, DB, what does Bo Levi Mitchell do up against him?
Oh, boy, you talk about a player who's hungry and can eat when he wants to. That's Bo Levi Mitchell. He, you know, Kevin Glenn's game is described as a quick release, you know, offense, and he gets the ball out of his hands quickly and gets it into his playmaker's hands. Bo Levi Mitchell does that and then some. Very fast operating offense. They execute extremely quickly and effectively, and there is a lot of dangerous targets in this Calgary Stampeders receiving corps. The offensive line in Calgary is probably an upgrade on Saskatchewan's, and that's saying something. It doesn't seem to matter who is in the lineup. You know, I was talking to Jake Thomas about this yesterday. If they have an injury, it's next man up, and it's almost as if nothing changed. This offense is very well coached, very well schemed under Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel, the general manager, who still has, you know, his roots planted in this offense that he originally built a couple years ago. It's very dangerous, and you're right. Bo Levi Mitchell is the reigning MOP in this league for a reason. He's extremely dangerous, can make all of the throws. He can nickel and dime you if you give him the small stuff. He can beat you over the top if you give him the big stuff. As I mentioned, a huge measuring stick for this Blue Bombers team as a whole, but the defense especially, because there's none better than the Calgary Stampeders when it comes to the offensive side of the ball.
Great stuff, Darren. We appreciate your coverage as always and look forward to Friday night when the Calgary Stampeders come to town for the Bombers home opener. Thanks for doing this.
Should be a fun one. Always a pleasure, guys. Have a good morning.
Thanks so much, DB.
We'll take a break, and Darren Dreger,
TSN Insider was on the afternoon ride yesterday. We'll hear his thoughts on the Jets coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices. Get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Stream away. Stream on. We have a double invite to the TSN 1290 advanced screening of Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets Wednesday, July 19th at Scotiabank Theatre. 12th caller through at 780-1290. 12th caller through at 780-1290. We'll get that double invite to the screening of that film, by all means. And, of course, the Boss Beats fan line will be open at 9 o'clock, too, for you to weigh in with your opinion on several things and might be including some of the comments Darren Dreger made on the afternoon ride yesterday on TSN 1290, Darren was asked to recap the Jets and free agency.
Yeah, you know what? I think Shoveldayup did fine work here. He was big game hunting. He tried to get in on Carl Alter. He didn't like the term and didn't like the money. And, you know, that's what the general manager has to decide on. But, you know, it's not like Dmitry Kulikov is a concession prize here, a consolation prize. He's not. You know, he'll be a real good ad for the Winnipeg Jets. And you guys know this. I mean, you know, they needed to lock down the position of goal. And I think that Steve Mason is a nice fit. I thought that Brian Elliott a couple of weeks ago seemed more likely. And they went down the road a bit with Brian Elliott, but it just didn't work out. That's the way it is during that period. And, you know, Brian Elliott landed on his feet, so he's going to be okay. And the Winnipeg Jets got a real good veteran goaltender, Steve Mason, who's you're going to help Hellebuck kind of round into form. That's the plan. But, you know, it's not trial by fire anymore. You know, Steve Mason is going to be able to handle the pressures that go along with playing in a Canadian city, and he should give Paul Maurice and the Winnipeg Jets type of goaltending that they didn't get consistently last year. So I would say two of the three pieces are in place, and, you know, I think Winnipeg is still in the market for a forward, preferably a center.
Still in the market, preferably a center.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. Do you think they're done?
You're always talking about how many centers are here. Everyone knows how many centers are here. Really? They're in market for a center?
Well, to me, it's, you know, Rossovic, those kind of guys, are they ready? And if they're not ready, you'd be better off getting a veteran center to sort of augment the lineup maybe on a one-year deal? Or is it better off to sort of bring in a young kid like that and let him go through some stuff?
There's not many. Like, when you're talking centers, as far as still out there free agents, there's not many guys out there. Mike Fisher in Nashville, it's hard to imagine. We're talking off air, hard to imagine him going anywhere. McClement. Like, there's not many guys out there. So I wonder. I'd be a little bit surprised to see them bring somebody in as a center, I think. No? Seems to be plenty of options here when you're talking about the fourth line.
Well, when I talk tons of centers, a lot of them are prospects. And then the other aspect is whether they like Perreault better on the wing or
they've said they do.
Middle.
They said they like him better on the wing. You got Kopp. You know, is it back to has enough maturation happened here where Lowry, Kopp in your 3-4 holes? You remember a couple of years ago that was the case at the end of the season. Shane Knighty told us he didn't see that happening last year. It didn't happen last year. Has Kopp his game come along far enough so that he can be your fourth line center and you get a level of production and feistiness and checking all the rest of it? I think he's probably there, isn't he? Would it surprise any of us to see Kopp the fourth line center here?
It wouldn't surprise me. I guess it just depends. Do they like him more on the wing? Because I kind of think his game is better suited to the wing.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
And he showed well in his short time with Scheifele and Wheeler. I know a lot of people could, but to his credit, he put up the points when he was up there with them. So I kind of like his game better on the wing, to be honest. But as a fourth-line center, you could do a lot worse than Andrew Kopp. So I just don't see a fit at all. And there's just no names left, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like maybe Chevy was in on a couple of people during the first couple of days of free agency, but the cupboard's pretty bare now, and I just don't see an upgrade, to be honest with you, out there than compared to what the Jets have.
I got is Yuri Hudler still available?
I think, as far as I know,
I think he is.
Now he's moved more to the wing over the past, or he was with Dallas.
I think he will be for a while too.
He was. He's still fairly productive, you know. And when you're talking like I don't know, like because you got to start manufacturing names if you're talking about coming here and making some sort of a contribution, or who are you going to go get right now? And you're talking about the space they have in the salary cap, and it makes a lot of sense to make sure you got plenty of space for a couple maybe remarkable key pickups sometime during the season here as they push for a playoff spot and all the rest of it.
Well, if they don't feel like Nick Petan and Jack Rossovic and these guys are ready for a regular role and maybe benefit from them, I have no problem with them adding a veteran winger or center to augment, you know, the top nine. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
That's fair. I don't think there's a spot for Rossovic on the team anyways, to start the year at least, to be honest. And that's probably the best for him. Like, I'd rather him play 22 minutes a night down in the AHL.
So if he's not at the fourth line center, Wicks, who is? And Paul Edmonds, we all recall him saying this, he felt that he was ready to take that jump, that step.
I agree with Paul if he's ready to take the jump. I just don't know if he's going to give you what a veteran could give you. So that to me, that's two different things. Could he maybe play in the National Hockey League this year? It sounds like he's ready to play, but is he going to contribute as much as maybe a veteran you could bring in for a one-year deal?
Contribute what? And who, well, with who's out there? Like, what are you talking, production?
Yes. I mean, he's going to be a rookie in the National Hockey League. I think a 28, 29, 30, 31-year-old veteran could give more than Jack Rossovic could in his rookie year.
There's just not many. Like, you look at who's available out there. If you're talking UFA, there's not much out there.
I like Hubb better on the wing, but I'd probably start with him as the fourth-line center. And let Rossovic's play in the AHL kind of, like, make him force you to open up a spot on the NHL roster, especially because you're, like, we assume Kyle Connor's going to be on the team, and I think he should. I think one rookie's enough with where the Jets, like with how crucial this year is. Until like I think it would benefit the Jets the best to let Roslovic force open a spot.
Cop Dano Matthias wouldn't be that bad as a fourth line. Something along those lines, right?
Yeah. Even Tanev, like if you put Tanev in the Moose and brought in a veteran to take that roster spot, I wouldn't have a problem with that either.
Tanev to the Moose?
Yes. If we're talking bringing in a veteran forward, I don't mind bringing in a veteran forward to give you more than maybe what Tanev can give you this year as well.
Yeah. I thought you were saying Tanev on the fourth line. But it's his production. I mean, the dude skates his yikes off, but there's got to be some level of production. You can't be .0 whatever in production when you're given the opportunity. You think that Matthias, Dano, and Kopp could give you some decent production.
We're going to take a break. Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with a great two-for-one deal that will be there. Deals, I should say, at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including the Winkler Centennial Golf Course, Scottswood Lynx Golf Course, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, La Verande Golf Course, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, the Steinbeck Flying Golf Club, and the Carmen Golf Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, a half hour away from your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line. Lots to get to, including if the Jets should add another forward, and if so, whom you think they should add to their depth. We're going to talk Jets, and we're going to talk National Hockey League and some of the moves in free agency with our good friend Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com. Gus, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on.
No problem at all. Thanks for joining us once again. And I guess we'll just start with the two big pieces the Jets acquired, and maybe we'll start with Dmitry Kulikov and what you think he could bring to the Jets roster. Do you like the signing?
Well, what you're getting is probably a mid-tier defenseman, somebody that can move the puck. He doesn't really have the same explosive rushing ability, I thought, that he kind of came into the league with, but he's really developed into somebody that's able to efficiently move the puck up ice. Last year was a really bit of a... It was an odd year. Performance issues on top of injury, on top of... you could kind of compound a few things together to really see how it affected the way that he was able to play within Buffalo's system. He wasn't the puck mover that they expected him to be coming from Florida. And I think that the struggles on top of the injury, on top of maybe just being a little bit out of place there, kind of made last year being an off year. I think that the Jets, as long as they understand, and the fans, as long as they understand that they're getting a mid-tier, decent second-pairing defenseman, should be happy with that.
Jágr, Iginla, and Doan all floating out there in Old Man Island waiting to be picked up somewhere. Those three cats, Gus, what do those guys have left in the tank? What do they have left to offer?
It's funny how you say cats and Jágr with the Panthers and all of that. But, well, here's the thing. I don't think Shane Doan has very much to offer anymore. It's a leadership, and I mean, the game is too quick for him. Even if he offers some depth scoring, you could get the same kind of depth scoring with a better element of speed from a younger, even less skilled player. You don't need veteran leadership that much, so I would stay away from Doan entirely. You know, I thought that it was a good move that Florida parted ways with Jágr, simply because of the fact that I think that Florida has their own identity issues and they need to figure those out, see what kind of club they are and move ahead that way. That's not to say that Jágr isn't effective. He could probably be a good novelty in Vegas or something, maybe on a cup contender as a depth acquisition, maybe a guy to rally around. But, I mean, as far as production goes, he's going to give you – you know, a wily veteran's production of less than expected performance, and he's just going to be one of those old veterans in the room, and a guy that I think would take to being a really good personality and helping those around him. So I think that Jágr of the trio that you mentioned would probably be the best bet to get a contract. Yeah, and you know, as much as I love Jerome Iginla and what he's done and all of that, I think it's gotten to the point where he showed that in Colorado he just wasn't able to compete at the same level that he was in his heydays or even leading into, you know, the winter years of his career. He kind of got a bit rejuvenated in L.A., but I'm still not convinced that he would become a very dynamic scorer once again. So I think he's kind of similar to Shane Doan. Perhaps it's a point where even the depth scoring is just not enough to constitute him having that kind of a role on a roster and on any particular team. So Jágr is your best bet.
It'll be interesting to see who and what goes where out of those three for sure. Gus, what do you think of Steve Mason? What does he add to the Jets?
Well, you know what he adds? He adds some competitive fire. And from my understanding, and again, goalies are mere voodoo. I have no idea how to really assess a goaltender properly. But when you start getting into a little bit more of the analysis from some of the better known goalie analysts, the overwhelming... I guess the thought would be that Mason was better than what was expected in Philadelphia and could potentially become the number one goalie here in Winnipeg. If he pushes and pushes and pushes, there is a distinct possibility that he could end up as the number one by the end of the year. I wouldn't expect anything more than a backup, but, you know, even if it pushes and makes for a good competition in the crease, you could probably get much better performance too. That was the one thing that really killed the Jets last year, and hopefully the stability that Mason brings, whether either as a starter or as a backup, can build out forward into the defense and into the forward units and just let the Jets be a better team than they were last year.
How geeked up are you about what the Calgary Flames have done?
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, I'm looking at what I'm actually writing the Flames right now, and you know, you have that 3M line, the Backlund, Frolik, and Tkachuk line that can just shut you down and really control play. You have some excellent skilled players, and Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau is just out of this world. But that blue line, you know, I always thought that Carolina was the model blue line, but you got guys like Giordano and Hamilton and Brody that can all move the puck, and you bring in Hamonic that can do the same. Maybe not to the exact same level, but you add a stability. What Calgary has done has been incredible. They seem to have addressed a lot of the concerns that they had kind of going into the playoffs last year, goaltending being the major one. I'm not convinced that Mike Smith is the answer, but as a Band-Aid solution, he'll do. And all the other components that they've added, Calgary is going to be a force next year.
I guess, what are your thoughts on Toronto and their defensive core as a whole, and where do they go next year with what they have in place right now?
Well, Lou Lamoriello indicated that they're going to be using Ron Hainsey, the newest acquisition, in a top four role. I'm not too fond of that, but I can understand why they would want to do that. They want to add a little bit of that stability that the veteran is able to bring. I mean, Toronto last year was just notorious for giving up leads in the third period, and that was one of their undoings. You can't just leave points on the table like that. So I guess the overwhelming feeling is to bring in somebody that would be able to provide a little bit more stability and allow the team to be more competitive in those situations. I actually think that as a whole, Toronto could do better defensively, and that's probably one of the things I think Babcock and company are going to try to address. I'm not as concerned over the lack of a big name on the blue line as probably most Leaf fans are, and I guess most pundits as well. To me, I think that they can do better as a committee, and they can have forward support to offset any big name on the blue line. I don't think it's the same situation, but what Pittsburgh did when Letang went out and they had injury trouble, they really did a good job in terms of defense by committee. And in today's NHL, if you have that same mobility on your first, second, and third pairing, you could really attempt to implement a similar attack no matter what forward line is playing. So I like that they added Hainsey. I don't really mind. I'm not sure he should get that much of I don't think that he should be exposed as probably as much as they want. Marlowe adds a little bit of a veteran leadership. I think that that's a decent pickup too. He's a bit of a mid-tier forward at this point. They're going to use him up front. And I think that they'll just play better just as long as they're able to do it as a team rather than just on the core components on the blue line.
A lot of Habs fans seem to be concerned, and you look at what's transpired there in the offseason, and yeah, they add Drew in, but you just kind of wonder how they're going to generate goals. Markov seems to be out of the mix. What's going on in Montreal? What do you expect from them this year?
It's baffling to see what's actually happening in Montreal. It's one of those situations where, you know, every component just kept cutting mobility from the blue line. They cut P.K. Subban, gone. Beaulieu, gone. Markov now potentially, gone. How are they going to move the puck up to the forwards who are going to struggle too? Radulov was a big component. You know, you can add Drouin, but, you know, he's not what Alex Radulov was, and he's not a proper replacement either. He's a good component, but he's not a replacement for him. So you get the Habs that are going to struggle up front if there's any type of injury to any of their stars, especially their scorers. If Max Pacioretty goes down or even if Drouin goes down, there's going to be hell to pay. But it's the blue line and the lack of mobility that is most glaring to me. I mean, I understand how they're rallying around Carey Price, and he's the goaltender, and if he falters in any way, the success for the Canadiens can kind of live and die based on how good Carey Price plays. I mean, it's going to be tough to watch them kind of dumping pucks out of their zone and having the forwards trying to scoop it up in the neutral zone to create offense. It's going to be a very interesting situation to see what they're doing in Montreal. I can understand what Marc Bergevin is thinking. It's easier to get a lot of outlet defensemen that don't necessarily need to skate the puck out, but they haven't increased the skill level. They've just tried to make more of a defensive presence, and I'm not sure if that's really the right way to go in today's NHL.
Gus Katsaros from McKeen'sHockey.com joining us on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. What about Ottawa? We sort of were going through the Canadian teams this morning, and what are your thoughts on them heading into this season, and do they regress? Do they get better? What are your thoughts on the Senators?
Well, I think Ottawa has a little bit of a mask on, because I really don't think that they were as good as where they ended up in the postseason. Their regular season was a bit of an anomaly, too. They kept getting outshot. They kept getting outplayed, yet they kept winning. It's nice to think that this can kind of go on, but it can't. It's an unsustainable way of finding success, especially in today's NHL where, I'll use the word parity, but what it is effectiveness. other teams will understand, and they'll have video. They'll be sophisticated when they're end up playing Ottawa. And I don't think that they're going to get the same level of, I'll call it luck, for the lack of better things. I don't think that the same things that happen next year are repeatable events to give them the same type of success next year. The good thing is, if Bobby Ryan could emerge as the scorer that he was in the playoffs during the regular season, that's a nice plus. I think that the loss of Mathot is probably going to be a little bit of an issue, but I really don't think that all-star Erik Karlsson is going to miss him that much. So I don't think Ottawa's issues up front are going to be any different. They could still probably score with the best of them. The blue line might still be a little bit there's some question marks there. I'm not sure whether it's really improved. I don't think so. And I think goaltending is just the matter of if Anderson can keep him in and Condon can come in if Anderson falters, I think Ottawa can be competitive. They're definitely a playoff team, but I don't really think that we're going to see the same type of successful team that we saw last year.
Have you given up on Neil Yakupov?
Not really. You know, the thing that I feel about Yakupov is he's become a perimeter player. The things that he did in junior was really get on the inside. You move inside those dots and you find success. And I find with Yakupov, he's just become a bit of a perimeter guy. If they can find a way to motivate him to get back into those dangerous scoring areas with and without the puck, we're going to see a very different Yakupov moving forward.
Does he fit in Colorado and with who?
Colorado needs a desperate injection of skill. It really doesn't matter. At this point, you know, he can end up playing with a speedster like MacKinnon, who could really do it all himself, and Yakupov could be a bit of a support player when you think about it. But I think that they just throw him on a top six unit and just kind of run with it for a few games, see what kind of chemistry that he develops with any of their top-end forwards. My assumption is that Matt Duchene will not be part of the Avalanche, so I wouldn't figure that there would be a partnership there. Nathan MacKinnon would be a very good secondary option, though.
Gus, we really appreciate your time, as always. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Pleasure's always mine, guys. Thanks very much.
Awesome stuff, Gus. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
We tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie as we have $10,000 in cash prizes to award select selfie takers across Manitoba. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a theme selfie in one of five bonus categories. Your picture could be worth at least up to $1,000. Or the selfie of the summer presented by Robertson College is worth $5,000. Other $1,000 prizes include a best smile selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens, best outdoor selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center, best hair selfie presented by Aura Hair Group, best food and drink selfie presented by Booster Juice, or best animal selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and we're teeing up the Boss Pizza fan line, a full hour of your calls at 780-1290. You can also text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Gentlemen, we started the show discussing Steve Mason, if he's your number one. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets later in the program, joined us and said he is the number one goaltender. Do you agree with that then? And are you fine with that going into the season? Is Hellebuck backing up?
Well, I'm fine with whichever way it works out. I'm fine with, assuming that the guy who gets dubbed number one is playing at a real good level. And ultimately, these two guys have got to combine for some average goaltending here, something 915-ish or better, hopefully, to help propel the Jets above that playoff line. Paulie would have, you know, if he's saying that Mason's the starter, period, end of story, he was kind of taken aback that any other thought could be there, then, hey, I'm cool with that if that's the way they're doing it. I'm really intrigued, though, the impact on Connor Hellebuck, and wonder just how hungry he's going to be to prove to the Winnipeg Jets, sure, you might, you know, this guy's making this much money, you can give him the number one spot, but I'm coming, like I'm charging here. And if there's any level of struggle by Steve Mason out of the gate, hovering something south of 9-10, and Connor Hellebuck, let's say, has four starts in the first X number of games, and he's sparkled, say, 9-20-ish, just if it works out like that, at some point in time, do they get into a wrestling competition that resembles something more platoon-like, then, yeah, and there's no question Steve Mason's their number one guy.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, and I like that dynamic between the two goalies, mm-hmm. and I think it's the right way to start, to be honest with you. And maybe the most basic element is, I think Steve Mason's a better goalie than Connor Hellebuck right now. Doesn't mean that Hellebuck can be in the future, but as of today, not having seen Hellebuck's improvements over the course of the summer, I think Steve Mason is better by, and probably by a fair bit, at this point in his career. So I think that's how you start the season. And you don't have it written in stone, and you don't have it written in ink, it's in pencil, and things can change based on how each goalie plays moving forward there. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. We've seen, I mean, Paul Maurice is coaching for his job this year, and he's coaching for a job next year, mm-hmm. you know, wherever it might be, because his contract is up, right? And we've seen Maurice in the past lean towards veterans, and I get the sense that, you know, Mason loves working in that number one role and getting a ton of games in a row. If he's playing well, I don't see Paul Maurice strain from that whatsoever, which kind of leads me to believe it wouldn't surprise me to see Mason break the 50-game mold and see Hellebuck try and crack 30.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on that? Who do you want to see? Who do you want to see? Who do you think you will be the starting goaltender when training camp breaks and the season starts for the Winnipeg Jets on the Boss Beats Fan Line coming up at 780-1290? Gentlemen, we're also ranking the Canadian teams and where you see them this season. Interesting across the board. We'll start with you, Troy. Once again, your top, I'll guess, top to bottom of your Canadian teams in order.
Yeah, I think we all, although it's different around it, we all had Winnipeg in the four hole, right?
Yes.
I think so.
Brandon and I did. You had, yeah, yeah, you did yep. too, yeah.
So I've got Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal, Vancouver, feeling like Ottawa, Montreal is a coin flip.
I'm going to get yelled at from a lot of people, but I have Toronto 1. Although I was pretty close with Calgary. I was kind of flip-flopping on that. But I'll go Toronto 1, Calgary 2, then Edmonton, Winnipeg, and then Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver rounding it out.
And I have Toronto. I don't like Toronto's defense at all. So I got Calgary, Edmonton. Montreal, Toronto is where I don't know what's going. One of them will be third. I got Montreal, Winnipeg, Toronto, Ottawa, and Vancouver. So where do you rank in order the Canadian teams at this point heading into the summer on the Boston Pizza Fan Line? And also, we heard from Andrew Harris. He feels the Calgary Stampeders defense is a lot like the Saskatchewan Roughriders defense, and there's a chance for the Bomber offense to stay on the field for periods of time and sort of do what they did against Saskatchewan. Do you agree with that and the defense that's coming in to face the Bomber offense?
I think you have to hope that's bang on, and by the first couple of weeks of the season against the Red Blacks, that Calgary has ended up eighth right now in net offense allowed. The defense has. They are eighth in rush yards allowed, and they are seventh in pass yards allowed. Trevor Harris has just kind of ripped them apart here, and there's all kinds of change in their back end, a young linebacking core, a secondary that doesn't have any household names right now. Seeing for them on their D-line that is already beaten up and missing guys. You got Charleston Hughes, who missed practice yesterday. Mika Johnson missed it on Monday. So they're beaten up. Charleston Hughes is unknown, his status for the game upcoming. So not only are they sort of missing some of those names that you got to know over the years defensively, but they're also beaten up a little bit. And the Bombers should be able to expose some of that, similar to what we saw from the Red Blacks. And they're going to have to, because you know dang well Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam will have a certain level of success against the Bomber D.
Agree?
Yeah. It's look, they're going to need a bunch. They're going to need some luck Friday night to try and keep the Stampeders from under 35.
You're not talking takeaways, are you?
It worked last year. That's what they're going to do. Realistically, though, right? Like, is there any other option for them to keep him under 35?
Who's your Jets starting goaltender to start the season? Rank the Canadian teams right now. Your thoughts on the Bombers and the Stamps and the potential for the Bombers to expose their defense. And also, do you think the Jets need anything else? Should they do some augmenting now as the offseason rolls along? 780-1290, your call's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your phone calls. And this segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes and 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation. And also you can text us now, text 129090 with your thoughts, and standard message rates may apply there as well. And we are talking, if you think Steve Mason is, should be, the number one goaltender heading into the season. Ranking the Canadian teams, and of course, if you think the Jets should augment at different positions as well, 780-1290. And then, of course, the Bombers host the Stampeders in the home opener. Andrew Harris was talking about how, on film, the Calgary Stampeders defense looks a lot like the Saskatchewan defense. Do you think the Bombers have a shot this weekend, and what do they have to do to get it done? Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. And Norm, you're kicking us off today on The Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Norm. Good, thanks.
Hey, Troy.
Hey,
I was going to say I'm very proud of the Bombers there. They punched those Riders right back in the nose as far as I'm concerned. When it was 17-3 there, I was getting a little bit worried that it might be a blowout the other way, but they showed some resolve and a lot of fight, and way to go, Bombers. Winnipeg is proud of you guys. And I'd like to say also with the Jets there, whatever, Chevy did a fabulous job there with his signings. Winnipeg is that much closer to being, almost an elite team. I think they could probably maybe get one more player on the third or fourth line for toughness, I think, maybe to improve the team, maybe for power for the penalty kill. But, I think Kyle Connor, too, I think, you know what, with these signings, those young players are going to play that much harder because they know that we're that close to going to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Call, man. And I sure agree with the point you make in that Bombers game, and such a key drive it was when they went down 17-3 and then respond right away before the end of the half to go 17-10, ultimately after the hurl pick to go 17-13. But that immediate response from 17-3 to 17-10, to me, was the game right there to respond like that.
Great stuff, Norm. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We'll get Andrew Dehane on, but we'll go to Alan now.
Alan, welcome to The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I think it's time that Calgary gets S-kicked, and I think that's going to happen Friday night.
Wow.
Calling the shot.
It's time, boys. It's time for this team that's been so dominant in this league for so many years. I think they're right for the pick in here.
So does that say, would the Bombers win by 20 if you're talking getting number two kicked?
Anything over two touchdowns to me is that kicked. If it's Calgary.
Fair. I wonder when's the last time they've lost by that much.
The Stampeders have never lost at IGF. I know that.
Yeah, that's true. Right?
And it's time. And I think it's time for them to lose big. So this is the time. And I think there's a lot of fans that feel, as I do, that this is the beginning of something wonderful with this team. I like what these guys have done the last bunch of years. I like their coaching staff. And the issues in the beginning was the linebacking core. They sure showed up last week. And the secondary has a couple of guys in there that are getting their feet wet. I think they'll be better this Friday night. I think the guys are going to play out of their out of their minds to beat this elite team, and I'm very optimistic about that. Now, as far as the Jets are concerned, somebody was wondering if we should get anybody else. I really like the way we sit now, but if they can find a veteran that they can sign for 3 years, and he's a guy that's going to get that locker room even more jacked up than it probably is, and they might have to give something up to get that guy, I don't see anything wrong with that.
You want like a veteran for 3 more years to come in?
Well, a veteran guy that's got 3 more years, and he's the kind of guy that can make a locker room even, you know, he's just a good team player that can really get the guys going, because I think all the pieces are here. We don't have any issues with scoring. We've had issues with defense, but if we can stay healthy, that's not going to be an issue, and now we've got a goaltender. So,
great stuff, Alan. We appreciate it.
Okay, man.
Take care, man. Great call.
Last time Calgary lost by more than 2 touchdowns was week 2 of 2015. 29-11 to Montreal. And Bo Levi Mitchell's numbers at IGF
are stupid.
5-0, 75% completion percentage, and over 315 a game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the Bombers have a legitimate shot this weekend, this year, to beat the Calgary Stampeders. I like the way they played them, you know, a rough first half in Calgary and then lost in the last second. But I think they have a shot to beat them. I don't think it'll be big, though. I don't think it's going to be a lopsided. I think this Stampeders offense still has a lot of punch to it and are going to put up some points this weekend. But I do think the Bombers have a fair shot to beat the Stamps.
Well, they got a fair shot. I mean, they got a, you know, they're 3.5-point dogs at home. So that's not a good sign. And then also the, you know, the Bo Levi Mitchell's got to feel bulletproof getting off the plane when you're coming to a place you've never lost before. And, yeah, this is a heck of a test. What happened, what transpired, some of the positives we saw against Saskatchewan, specifically with the Bomber defense, likely aren't going to be there Friday night against the Stampeders, but I do certainly like the upbeat outlook there. It'll be it's a heck of a test, that's for sure.
Thanks for the call, Alan, on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Andrew, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, morning, guys. In terms of the Jets and what we might need next, you know, in terms of finishing up the squad there, I think what we're probably going to be talking about in 6 to 8 months is that we're going to need a goalie, and we may need another defenseman, because I don't think the what Chevy's gotten in terms of Kulikov and Mason are a solution. I don't understand how we in Winnipeg have this belief that this is all of a sudden going to fix our problems. Mason is, quite frankly, not a very good goalie. He was, I think, 39th or 40th last year in save percentage in the league. Came off a very poor season, and Kulikov had, I think, 7 points in all of last season. I get that he was injured and all that sort of stuff, but that goes part and parcel as to why I don't think these guys are the fix. I think one of the things that Jets fans get kind of berated for is having these really high expectations, and I think part of the problem is that we locally and our media here really up, you know, really talks about these players like they're better than they are. Like, well, I heard some media locally talking about how we have some of the best, you know, D-core in the league, to tell, you know, in terms of the six defensemen. That's far from true. Enstrom is not a very good defenseman. Buff is not a very good defenseman. Kulikov, I don't know why we're talking about this guy being like a good defenseman. He hasn't proven to be. So, I'm just confused as to how we think that Steve Mason coming in is going to all of a sudden fix a problem. Other teams in our division, in our conference, have gotten much, much better. I think if you take a look at how we pair against other teams, we're actually far worse off than we were last year, because other teams in our division and conference have actually improved.
Well, I'll counter that, Andrew, I don't get why so many people, not so many, a couple people have asked me the same question you're asking me. Why do you believe in Mason? He had an awful year last year. It's because of the 5-6 previous seasons. The same thing about Dmitry Kulikov. Why do you believe in Kulikov? He had an awful season last year. He did have an awful season last year, but he also spent 7 pretty good ones in Florida. If you're talking about an 8-year NHL career And seven of them are pretty good, save for the last year where he had a back injury. I don't know why you lean more towards last season's 47 games played compared to the 74, 73, 81 the previous three seasons in Florida where he was really good. And he's only 26.
Now, you can't – that's sort of fool's gold. I think when you're talking about Steve Mason, and if you want to go and take a snapshot of the last 5 years, then he's in the top half of the league for save percentage. I don't know – The reason why he's here, the reason why the Jets had an opportunity to get him is because of the off year last year. So if you want to put all the weight into that one season and ignore what he accomplished the previous 4 years, that's your business. And hopefully, for the sake of the Jets, you're proven incorrect. Kulikov, to say that he's never done it, or is that sort of a strange perspective as well. An off season last year, an injured back. But there was a couple years for sure previous to that in Florida where he's averaging well over 20 minutes and playing at a pretty solid rate. He's sort of a sleeper there, the guy that might come in if he stays healthy. Certainly can contribute in the 5-6 at the very least pair and maybe in the 3-4. So in when you're saying that media blowing up the Jets, I don't get that at all. I think not if you're listening to this station and specifically this show. That doesn't happen.
Well, the thing is Mason only has had 30 wins only twice in his career, so he's not really a real proven goaltender.
Well, Andrew, hang on here, Andrew. In 2013-14, in 61 games with the Flyers, he had a .917 save percentage. In 2014-15, in 51 games, he was a .928, and in 2015-16, he was a .918.
And his number of wins means nothing about his rate of play.
In the previous three seasons to last year, he was above .915 and in the .920s one of those years. That's why I don't get why he's proven to have a great save good save percentage the previous out of the last 5 years, four out of the 5 years except for last year. So I get why there's some trepidation around it or some concern around last year, and the same with Kulikov. But when the majority of his career, the last 5 years, he's been very good, I don't understand why you're concerned that we're overblowing it.
He's a .918 goalie in Philly. Like that, those are the numbers. Like you can take a snapshot of one season all you want, but I'll look at 4 years or 5 years over just one where it was a slow start and then he picked it up at the end. I think in his last 20 games he was at a .922.
And if you watch much Philly, they weren't that far off from the Jets or Toronto a couple years ago as far as gong show defensively.
Like, do you think it's over for these guys at 29 and 26 years old?
Andrew's gone.
Sorry.
But I think he does.
Yeah, I mean, and let's hear from more fans. I don't think I'm overblowing anything in the fact that Steve Mason is an improvement in goaltending.
I'm picking the Jets to not make the playoffs, so I know I'm not overblowing anything. But when you bring up the that was Andrew, right? When you're saying all the teams in the Central have improved, who are you talking about, man? Dallas? Period. Who else are you talking about? Hasn't been a whole bunch. There's kind of status quo for the most part in the Central outside of Dallas.
There's some teams in the West that have improved, like Calgary.
We'll worry about the Pacific at a later date. You only need to worry about the Central to get into the playoffs, right?
This is interesting, Andrew. It's interesting that
it's a minority opinion, respected.
Had a lot of people ask me about Kulikov and Mason last year, and I answer them the same way. Like, I get last year wasn't good, but I don't think as a 26-year-old, 8 years in the league, that the one poor season is reflective of how he's played the overall eight.
You don't get either guy here unless they had the seasons they had last year. That's something important to remember.
Boss Pete's fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Steve.
Steve, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You?
Yes, good. Enjoy the show, as always. You know what? I was just going to make one quick point. We keep talking of these players, and I have no problem with Chevy signings. We keep talking of these players fixing our issues, but what I would like to see talked about is the systems and team defense and these kind of things as kind of the fixes to what we have to deal with. I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Okay, thanks, and sorry, Steve, and we'll take a break, actually, and touch on those points when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our previous segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca. Boss Beats Fan Line, 780-1290. Text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Cole and Darren, hang on. We'll get to you momentarily. Steve brought up systems, team defense. A lot of people, now that the lineup has been augmented, are talking about coaching, making being the difference, and the specialty teams, all that kind of stuff, defensive play.
And it's a I'm concerned about it, the defensive system. We see the man that they play, right? And I know that there's a good chunk of teams that play man, but it seems to me that there's a fair amount of chaos that happens in the Jets' D zone at times that has broken down fairly consistently over the last couple of years. And very often, and more often than not, it is the forwards. But it's also, you see, Dustin Byfuglien looks to me like he's gets lost or confused out there sometimes in losing that sort of coverage. I really wonder about that as well. I think that's a fantastic question to ask. And you got to wonder if there's going to be some slight adjustments to it or anything like that going forward. That is a great question, specifically the defensive system the Jets play in their own zone.
It is an aspect when we're talking about potentially bringing in a veteran forward to augment what's here. A center or somebody that could kill penalties would be a great addition to this.
And you know
team.
What? I totally disagree. I think the Jets, they more than they have the upper echelon quality players for the PK. I want to see the good players. I want to see Scheifele and Wheeler out there killing penalties. I want to see guys that have speed, the great puck awareness, are smart as hell with their sticks. Those are the guys I want to see as a part of the penalty kill for the Jets here. You know, you fill in things on the power play as need be. And if some of your upper echelon guys like that are maybe not on the power play as often because they're your penalty killers, then I'm cool with that. But that's a part of this Jets team going forward. They too often to me, having Stewie out there, for instance, having other players out there, you know, when you got Adam Lowry out there for extended periods, that where there's not enough speed maybe or as much speed that you need to be out there to suffocate and take away time and space and create a little bit more pressure on the puck shorthanded that I think a lot of people would like to see. That I want to see way more of skilled guys out there that can skate their fannies off suffocating teams on the power play.
I think you're asking too much of Wheeler and Scheifele to play top two lines, power play, and penalty kill.
But if I have to concede and stand down on one of those things, I want to emphasize the penalty kill. And so if that means that you're utilizing secondary talent as far as the Jets are concerned on a power play, like I'm open-minded to that. And there's enough top end talent here with the Winnipeg Jets for their first team power play where maybe you can get away from using one of those guys sorts of things on your power play and instead emphasize the PK. The PK is, I dare say, even more important than the power play. Like Paul Maurice has talked before, keeping the puck out of your net is the primary objective or maybe the most important thing. This team is fine and dandy 5-on-5. It's going to score its fair share of goals. But what can completely derail this team and destroy their playoff hopes is a crap penalty kill again. And if you don't use sound enough players, fast enough players, smart enough players, you're going to get bit with it again.
I think that's ludicrous thinking to use Wheeler and Scheifele more in the penalty kill than the power play.
You look at I'm saying to emphasize the penalty kill first and foremost, but you look at what happened in the playoffs, the team that make the playoff runs, and look at who are contributing on their penalty kills. There's a lot of talent out there, and I think that's an aspect the Jets have not approached properly in years past. I think it's a part of the reason why the PK struggles so much.
David Desharnais has been signed by the New York Rangers. That's just coming out right now.
And should the Jets, for $1 million for a year, is that when you're talking, yeah, the Jets after a center, is he a guy that maybe the Jets would have benefited from in a fourth line role? You look at it like him in offseason last year. And you know, another guy that like 0.3 points a game and a guy who's capable of maybe even more production than that. Is that the kind of guy the Jets want on the fourth line center? When we hear Darren Dreger talk?
I'm okay.
I don't know. I'm thinking more of like a Daniel Winnicker or some or a Frolik like type player to come in and kill penalties.
Hey, if there was a Frolik type player out there, then yeah, go for it. I just don't think he exists. That's the only problem.
Let's get back to the phone lines. Cole, before we take a break here, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. Hello. Beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
Indeed. Looks like a good week of it, man.
Yeah, well, you know, my call is more surrounding a little bit of optimism. I really like what Winnipeg's been able to do in signing Kulikov and Mason. I think Mason in particular, like you guys were saying earlier, has a lot of sneaky upside being with the Flyers the last several years. You know, people look at them now in their defensive corps. They've got a lot of young pieces, but for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been a mess back there. So he's been playing, you know, behind a defensive core that hasn't been very good, and he had that really good rookie year. He had a couple good seasons, so I'm a little more optimistic about that. I do think the cap hit for Kulikov was a little bit high, but he's going to come and help on the penalty kill. But my question for you guys is, I saw Chevy was doing some.
Did we lose Cole?
Apparently.
Oh, Cole. We'll see if we can get the question from you, and we'll get to it after the break, Cole. And hang on, Darren, as well, and everybody else. More of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you a chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, and much more. Here's where you can find us. TSN Jocks and Jockeys Night tonight at Assiniboia Downs starting at 6. That's tonight, July the 5th, and MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. The Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Cole's called back in, and you had a question regarding Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Yeah, we're getting me back on. So I saw when Chevy was addressing the media, he mentioned that he felt like they're ready to take the next step. And I want to know if you guys think that next step might be, whether it be making it past the second round or getting to the playoffs. What do you guys think that is? I do think that they addressed some needs, and I like what they went out and did, because we haven't seen that as much in previous years. And I think even cap-wise, they're in a good position moving forward to be able to re-sign some of their young guys.
I think getting to the playoffs is the first step. Winning a round, you know, or getting by the first round's another step. I think way too much is emphasized the Jets getting swept by the Ducks that year they got in. They could have easily have won one, maybe two of those games. They held the lead in the third period going in. But having said that, I mean, there's no question. Making the playoffs one step and then winning a round, a second step.
I think the next step is making the playoffs for sure. Yeah. I think that's what the next step is, and after that is a step after that. But that, to me, is the next step, and I think they do it.
Yeah, well, with the Central, it might be different if it was the Central last year, right, where you know things were kind of wonky and it wasn't as difficult. But I think with how brutal it sets up to be this year, just making the playoffs and being competitive in the first round, I think is that's probably the bare minimum, I think, right?
It's an interesting point. I forget which caller it was that called in about the division and who got better, and he said, we hear a lot about
Andrew.
That. Andrew. And he brought up the point that, you know, Dallas got better, but who else?
That's what I said after the call, man. Yeah. He said a bunch in the division got better. Dallas is the only real team that has made considerable change to their roster.
Yeah, Minnesota didn't do a whole lot. I mean, they traded Scandella and Palminville to Buffalo, and
I guess Chicago's made a bunch of change, but I don't know how many people are going to argue it's necessarily better.
A net negative probably with Chicago. Like I think Chicago and Minnesota at absolute best stayed even, but I think they both declined a little bit. The Blues, Shen for Laterra, that's an improvement
the
there.
The Blues could be sneaky, man. They kind of got younger on the fly, right?
A little bit, but yeah. You got guys like Steen plays a big role on that team, and he's going to be 34, 35.
Got Mike Yo.
Jay Bomeister is, he saw the decline a bit last year with him, right? Like
Pareko will help pick that
Pareko up. Pareko will, but they also lost Shattenkirk, and people like to go after Shattenkirk a little bit, but he helped their power play, one of the best power play defensemen in the NHL since he's joined the league, and he still played some big minutes for them. So I'm not totally sold. And Jake Allen is such a – he's the ultimate wild card, right? Like, he finishes with a 9-15, but the first half of the year, they sent him home. They didn't bench him. They sent him just away from the team. And then after that, he won them the first-round series mm-hmm. against Minnesota. So, like, I still don't know what you're going to get from that guy.
They got Thorburn, too.
Tomorrow we'll get into this about who we think gets in and who doesn't in the playoffs on paper, as it is July. Thanks for the call, Cole, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Darren, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Awesome. Just kind of picking up on where you guys are talking about right now with that previous caller. I just laugh when callers call in with some of the Jets hate on, Mason or Kulikov. I mean, that's ridiculous to judge them solely on last year. You know, the guy needs to spend an extra 10 minutes on his computer and look a little closer at these other moves then, if he's solely basing him on last year. You know, Ben Bishop's numbers have not been good. So if he's going to compliment Ben Bishop, well, then look closer at last year. Even the year before, Bishop did not have good numbers. I mean, if you want to look at what Calgary did, look closer at Hamonic's numbers last year, at Mike Smith's numbers last year. Like, that, the guy is just looking solely at the Jets and ripping for the sole purpose of ripping. But I'll let that one go. My other question for you guys, and I don't know if you've talked about this player or not, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on Jussi Jokinen. He's played a lot of center in his life. He's one season removed from a 60-point season. He's, I think he's known as one of the best shootout guys. And I know that maybe sounds silly, but, man, if we're going to be in a playoff race, stealing a couple extra points because you bring in a shootout specialist who can also center your third or fourth line, I don't know. I think he's someone to consider if we can get him on one of those one-year, $1 million kind of show-me type deals. And I'll let you guys discuss. Have a great day, fellas. I love calling in.
Thanks,
Darren. We appreciate you taking the time to call in and weigh in with some thoughts. Jussi Jokinen. Oh, and as opposed to the other stuff, look, to me it's two different things. If you want to discuss Mason and Kulikov as players, so be it. But to me, it's not even an argument if they don't help this team. Are they better than what you have? Are they better than Ben Chiarot? Are they better depth-wise just for having him here? Of course they are. Goaltending-wise, it's not even have you added some depth and some skill to the position? Yes. So to me, that's a non-argument. Do they help the Jets get better? Yes, they do. The degree of what they're going to help them to and themselves as players individually is a different debate to me. But the fact that they make the Jets better, to me, isn't even a debate.
Jokinen looks pretty darn good.
I've always liked Jussi Jokinen. He's like the Lee Stempniak kind of guy, right? Where, for whatever reason, they bounce from team to team, but the point totals are always there. And
I've always been a fan of Jussi Jokinen. I really like him.
Darren's right. You're going to get him for probably a year, probably a million. Like, there's basically no risk whatsoever involved, and he does make a good point. Like, it's silly, but anytime you can, if the added bonus of a shootout specialist is there, like, there is a ton of value in that. Especially look at a team like Toronto last year, who almost missed the playoffs. They had 15 overtime shootout losses, and they were the worst team in the shootout last year. If they're even average, they're a 100-point team. Like, that, there's the slight margins when it comes to the NHL, like Troy said, where percentage points here and there in the power play are, from 20th to 10th can be as little as 3 or 4%. Well, an extra 2 or 3 points in the shootout, that can be the difference between 9th in the West and a wild card spot.
Is he a UFA right now? Because I don't see him popping up on the stuff that
yes,
I have.
Yes, he is.
His face-off numbers are real solid. Possession numbers are solid. His points are solid.
He's a really good face-off guy. And as he said in the shootout, I like him. He has 57 points in 81 games in 13-14 in Pittsburgh. Then he goes to Florida, gets 44 points in 81, 60 points in 81. Last year had 28 points in 69 games. But who knows what was going on in Florida last year.
But he ain't going to be cheap, though. Right? Like, you're talking a guy who's going to give you it. damn near a half a point a game.
And he probably wants some term at that age, but
he's not getting it though.
No, that's what I mean. So he probably wants some term. So if you have $11 million in cap space and you want to give him 3 or 4,
can't you give him a couple? Why not give him a couple of years?
Give him 2 years.
Why not give him a year, $2-3 million?
You just got to wait. Well, yeah, maybe.
I don't think he's getting anything at all. To be honest with you, we see it all the time. These mid-30-year-old forwards. They don't sign right away. He's just going to wait until the season gets closer, and he'll kind of take his spot and pick where he wants to go. And he's only going to get a 1 year deal. I don't see a way he gets more than 2 years. Like Mike Camilleri, for example, 1 year, $1 million with the Kings.
.64 points per game over the last 5 years. Wicked possession numbers. Wicked at the dot. This doesn't make sense.
Camilleri also can go where he wants to go and take what he wants to take because he got a buyout. So if he wants to play in L.A. and live on the beach for a mil, he can do that. You see Jokinen at 34 years old. Would you give him 2 years, $5 to $6 million?
No.
What would you give him for 1 year? Three?
Two.
I mean,
two.
You got to keep in mind it's Winnipeg, so you got to get him to come.
Yeah, I don't break the bank for him, but
is he going on your fourth line though? You're talking like he's playing.
I put him third.
17, 18 minutes. Well, they're not moving. If they move Adam Lowry down to the fourth line, I'll darn near eat my shorts on this because they just seem too committed to having him on the third line. But I'm not sure what's going on here. How has he not already been landed? And I know that we're going to see a bunch of $1 million veterans out there. Right? There's going to be all kinds of those types of contracts. But this is remarkable. Like his numbers, they're silly. How is he out there still?
I wouldn't be surprised to see a team like Washington or Montreal eventually pick him up, right? Like where
does Montreal not jump all over this?
Why do you guys feel that Lowry is just ingrained at the third line center? Is it just because of last year?
No, it just seems like they're completely committed to his evolution as a player, and they just seem completely in with him. I don't think they're going to... You know, what he did last year wouldn't suggest that they're going to knock him down to the fourth line, right? Do they not seem committed to him being the third line center?
Well, yeah, but for the future, for sure, if it works out that way. But if it doesn't work out that way, I mean, he was given all the opportunity last year. I believe in Adam Lowry. I think I've been on record as saying I think he's going to be here for a long, long time. But if you could bring in a veteran.
He didn't do well last year?
Adam Lowry?
That's who we're talking about.
I didn't have a problem with what he did last year, no. I thought he got better as the year went on.
15 goals. I don't know how many of those came on the power play.
He had a fair amount, yeah.
And it's not. I'm not talking here really from my perspective. I think the Winnipeg Jets are going to be, they would be, I'd be very happy if he was the fourth line center. It might be something that holds back this team if he's the third line center.
Well, I'm thinking if you bring in a Jokinen. I mean, like, there's 11 mil in cap space, so I agree it'd have to be a 1 year thing.
I think Adam Lowry would be absolutely perfect in the role of Brian Boyle for the Jets. I think that's an excellent role for him, a fourth line center who, and it doesn't play fourth line minutes, right? Plays 10, 11, whatever it is you want out of him a night. And I think he fits that perfectly. I agree with Troy though, where it seems word around the team is they value him as that third line shutdown centerman, and that's how they envision him. I just feel like they're committed to that. Like, I don't know why they would change that from last year going into this year is all.
I don't know why he wouldn't give Jokinen more than 1 year. Like, what's the deal there?
Well, the problem with giving him more than 1 year is what are you paying him? And because next year you have so many guys that need contracts, you still have Hellebuck that has to sign here. They have $10 to $11 million in space this year, but they still Andrew Kopp needs a contract, Connor Hellebuck needs a contract, so that's going to dip into that. And then I think if you go more than 1 year, now you're talking Morrissey money, Ehlers money, Trouba money all next year.
I just have some trouble believing that a guy like Jokinen can be out there with all the numbers that he's not. I know that there's a lot of guys out there, and with his age, it's detrimental.
Well,
but you don't think one of these
years,
desperate teams are going to dish out to? If you want to get him, I think you have to give him 2 years.
If you want to give him 2 years, what are you paying him? Because then it doesn't fit to me after this year.
If he wants 2 years, I'm out. 1 year commitment, I'm fine with. But
if he wants 2 years at even $2 million per, you're running into trouble next year.
But if you're the Winnipeg Jets, and if this year is that important, are you willing to accept that.
Then I try and bump the money up for 1 year.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with giving him three and a half this year for 1 year.
I just don't think it's going to cost that much. I really don't. I just think he's that prototypical guy that for some reason just kind of hangs on with the team. It's kind of like what he did when he went to Florida. It's not like he went there with a bunch of fanfare. I just kind of foresee him, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks signing with, I don't know if it'll be the Jets, but maybe some other playoff team.
I don't think there's anything prototypical about still being a UFA when you're sitting there with a real strong at the dot faceoff percentage, super strong possession numbers, and you're going to average about a half a point a game.
Connor Hellebuck, Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev need contracts this year, and there's about 10.6 in cap space. So if you're going to give him two or three, I don't have a problem with that this year. Next year, the guys who need contracts are Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, Nikolai Ehlers, Marco Dano, Nick Petan, and those are just the guys on the roster, Jacob Trouba, Josh Morrissey. So I don't see it fitting another year after this.
He's worth more than $2 or $3 million a year. Last year he made $4 million.
Well, yeah, so where does it fit next year?
Well, even if it's a 1 year deal, like you're gonna have to fill up the coffers pretty good. Like at least $4 million, no? Why, he certainly doesn't deserve a reduction in pay. The role that he would come if you came in here and if he filled your third line spot and if they were willing to push down Lowry to the fourth line, that would be something to get really excited about.
I have no problem with him giving him 2 to 3 for 1 year.
No,
but no more than that, and no more term. It doesn't. There's not room for him contract wise next year.
You guys are lowballing. There's no way you land him 1 year for $2 million. Zero chance.
I smell a bet.
We'll see.
And how? You know what? Shame on the Montreal Canadiens, who are desperate for help down the middle. That this guy's sitting out there, and the Canadiens haven't already jumped all over him.
Well, what's Montreal got for cap space here? 1 second. Take a break. They have $14 million in cap space, and they need centers. We'll take a break on the Big Show and get back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Interesting discussion. 780-1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Mark, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to disagree with Troy on who's going to be killing penalties for the Jets.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, does Crosby kill penalties with Pittsburgh?
Well, I just want to make it clear. What I'm saying is, to me, the Winnipeg Jets, at this point in time, with their four lines, I would like to see, at this point in time with their depth, the fourth line be leaned on a little bit more so. Same with the third line. So start distributing 5-on-5 a little bit more evenly across the board. That opens up your top six a little bit more to partake in penalty kill. So I'm not saying to go and have Scheifele and Wheeler out there as your top two guys on PK, but I'm saying to utilize a guy like Wheeler maybe on your PK, and some of those minutes can be absorbed where he's out there on the PK instead of 5-on-5 situations, because you're utilizing your third and fourth lines a little bit more. Ultimately, what I want to see, though, is more of the skilled guys, speed-spaced guys, guys that are really smart with their sticks and the puck. I want to see more of that on the PK. I think it's imperative.
Right, and I think you teach your third and fourth line guys how to be better penalty killers. And like Nick Menino broke his leg blocking a shot. I'm sure we don't want Scheifele breaking his leg, blocking a shot, obviously.
Yeah, I would much rather see those guys play top 6 minutes and power play than kill penalties. I mean, if injuries come into it, I don't have a problem with it, but I think it's better to go get some, maybe sign a forward that can kill a penalty and work with the guys you got. I agree with the caller.
I think it all depends on who your personnel is.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pittsburgh can get away with it. They don't need Sidney Crosby necessarily to kill penalties, but Boston, their top two penalty-killing forwards in ice time were Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand. And they're not too worried about those two guys getting injured blocking shots, and Brad Marchand had the best year of his career last year while leading the Bruins in ice time among forwards shorthanded. So if the team feels like they're good enough to do it, and I think Blake Wheeler is. Like, Blake Wheeler, you can't watch him play and tell me he's not one of the better penalty-killing forwards in the NHL, right? Like, I have no problem with Wheeler playing a ton of minutes shorthanded. You just you do have to play that balancing act, though, of not overworking some of those guys, right? And that comes back to the point of, you know, maybe 5-on-5. If you get more depth in your bottom six,
which they've got now,
and you're not chasing the lead every third period like they did a ton last year, then you're not leaning on those guys as much and having them play 23, 24 minutes.
The net effect of a superior penalty kill is hugely impactful on the team, and you're not going to get that by trotting out guys that are like they need to have their speeds, a bunch of speed out there on the penalty kill. Guys smart with their sticks. So there's certain guys like a Perreault who's super smart with his stick and nifty with his stick, getting it in lanes, all the rest of it. He's a guy on your peak. I know Joel Armia is out there, but Joel Armia is not the fastest guy in the world, but he's fantastic at on the PK. So maybe have a, you know, a complement of a Wheeler-esque type of a player out there, identify him and get him going. But I would like to see same defensively. I want to see not a Mark Stewart out there on the PK. I want to see the best the Jets have defensively out there. Something, show me Trouba and Morrissey out there way more on the PK than, and if I've got to sacrifice the power play a little bit, then I'll do that. But my PK is going to be tops and super sound.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Jeremy, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Hey guys, how you doing this morning?
Good, thanks.
I know the show's almost over here. We'll just make it real, real quick.
Sure.
First thing, Troy Westwood and I, and apparently some other people, have the same opinion of Adam Lowry. I think what you're missing, JT, is that he, if you remember him a couple of years ago, they were talking about putting him down on the moose. And what he has done every year, in my opinion, has improved more than any other Jet. And he has actually cemented himself in that third-line center role. I think last year was his best year, and he was absolutely 100% fantastic at it. And he just seems to get better and better every year for the dollar amount that they're paying him. He's a steal of a third-line center that I think is one of those guys that you're going to need to go on a deep run in the playoffs. So that's just me agreeing with Troy. My second...
Yeah, I'm not down on Adam Lowry at all. In fact, I was the one, if it came to protecting him over Perreault, was going Lowry. You still there, Jeremy?
It's not so. I think the Jets ultimately would be better off if Lowry was the fourth line. If you could bring someone that could be more productive. I question how productive Adam Lowry can be. And even from a skating and speed type standpoint, I think the Jets he'd be a fantastic fourth line center, which is the point that Wicks is making.
Brian Boyle had 25 points last year. Adam Lowry had 29. And Boyle played a lot less minutes, right? So that's... I just think that's the perfect situation for the Jets.
That's how I see them grooming him, is that. And that's what I think his role is going to be for years and years. And it's going to come relatively inexpensive for years and years as well, is in my mind. Jeremy, we got to go, but feel free to try again tomorrow and get the rest of your thoughts in there. Sorry, we got to go. We're out of time. Congratulations to Ron Carey and Mark Chernechko, who won our double invites to the TSN 1290 screening of Valerian and the City of Thousand Planets. We appreciate you listening. Jocks and Jockeys night tonight at the Assiniboia Downs. If you want to join us, most of us will be out there. Of course, Rick Ralph is up next with the Don Vito Roundtable at 11, the Gondola Pizza warm-up with Hustler at 2, and then at 3, the afternoon ride with Hustler and Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. We'll be back tomorrow morning on behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth. We'll be back with you. Enjoy your day, everyone. It's going to be beautiful out. The Big Show back on TSN 1290 tomorrow morning at 6.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.